Sorry, John, I know you haven't talked.
As soon as I see. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District meeting. Today is Thursday, October 10th. For the record, it is 9:04. I'd like to call the meeting to order. And we will open it up for public comment. Oh, and showing member Alex Amini is not present. He will not be here today. Thank you, Joan. And then public comment. Please state your name.
Good morning. I'm Johnny Biagini. I'm a board member of the Morro Bay Harbor Festival, and I want to thank the TBID for their help this year for the Harbor Festival for us to put on the 32nd annual Harbor Festival. It was a great success with fabulous weather, unheard of, I think, at this time of year, and it was truly magnificent, and I want to thank Karen for providing Travis to us, who helped us with the Facebook postings that we had leading up to and the day of the event. So thank you very much for that. We will, in the very near future, provide you with numbers and all that good stuff, but just want to thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close the public comment. Thank you. Yes, hopefully everybody made it out last weekend. If not, come next year for Harbor Fest. They did have some amazing weather. It was a great weekend. I love our Indian summers. I'm going to move on to board announcements. Jane?
This is not an announcement, but I would like to give some feedback to Johnny on the Harbor Fest. It was fabulous. And the vendors that stayed with us loved the way it was set up, and they can't wait till next year. So I want to give you that feedback, because I thought that was pretty terrific. I also wanted to tell everybody that this weekend marks the first weekend of Open Studios. It's San Luis Obispo countywide, but there's 30 artists in Morro Bay. I hope you get out to see all the artist studios. It's a unique experience. There's a catalog available at the Art Center, which is on the corner of Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street. And you can also download the catalog at the website of Arts Obispo. So I hope you'll come out. This is the first weekend. There's two weekends, but many artists are not open the second weekend. So give it a shot.
Joan?
Thank you, Michelle. And thanks for that. I think a lot of people don't know that we have a whole art community here that functions and holds events. And that's another one of those micro niches that Carl Roboto, you know, is referring to. I would like to announce that the Morro Bay Community Foundation, which believes that all children deserve the right to play, and we are holding our annual fundraiser, Morro Bay Sings, and this year, drum roll please, tick, 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 I can't do a drum roll, we are having Morro Bay Sings Elvis, and AGP, there's a nice poster down there in front, thank you very much. The event is Saturday, November 9th at the Morro Bay Community Center. It is $20, and there's three sets of Elvis music played in a singer-songwriter tradition. Aaron English, Julian Temple, and Les Beck will be the artists this year at this year's show. The doors open at 5:30, and the show starts at 7. You might ask why the doors open at 5:30. Well, not only is it wildly popular, but the Galley Seafood Bar and Grill also caters the dinner there. It's soup, salad, and bread for a mere $10. Again, all proceeds go to youth sports and recreational scholarships for kids within the Estero Bay area, Morro Bay, Cayucas, and Los Osos. This is a fabulous evening of entertainment and fun. You can pick up your tickets at the Morro Bay Recreation and Parks Department, Coalesce Bookstore, Volumes of Pleasure, Riddell Smokehouse. You can call Mitch at 234-2980 or Joan at 459-3274 to get your $20 tickets and to reserve your dinner tickets. There will also be wine and beer and non-alcoholic beverages. We encourage the entire community to put on their white patent leather, jewel-studded jumpsuits, and their blue suede shoes. and their blue suede shoes. If you're from New York, you might actually have one, or Tennessee. Where was he from? Nashville. So if you have one of those suits, break it out. If not, I understand that there will be some life-size cutouts of Elvis that you can have your photo taken with, and I encourage you to come on down and do that and enjoy the evening and support the children of our Greater Estero Bay.
What was the date on that again?
That is Saturday, November 9th, and I can sell you your tickets, Michelle.
Great. Sounds like lots of fun. Karen, any announcements? Nick?
No.
John? None. Also, I'll shout out Oyster Festival is coming up October 19th, so make sure you go down to Oyster Festival as well. It's the only thing I can think of between now and our next meeting of events. And I found out they're having a chess meet on October 19th as well. I had some gentlemen show up at the hotel yesterday looking for rooms for October 19th for a chess meet. And I was very intrigued by this because it's like eight gentlemen that come. So this might be something interesting. I told them they should move it. Last year they had it in November. I said you need to move it back to November because I was already almost sold out because of the Oyster Festival. But another little niche of chess that's going on in Morro Bay. And that's also October 19th. Okay, moving on to approval of the minutes. July 11th, hopefully everybody's had a chance to review the minutes and we can get a motion for approval.
I'll make a motion, we approve.
A second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. Motion carries 6-0. Okay, we'll move on to quarterly TOT report, and I'm going to turn that over to John Myers.
If everybody would like to get their popcorn and sit back in their easy chair for a while.
John, do you have it for the overhead?
No, I don't. It's too small to
print out.
To show on the overhead. It's just we tried it once, and it just does not show well. Sorry. Anyway, this is the quarterly TO2 report. We've deferred it a couple of times. I think everybody has a packet, and there was a packet on the website, so hopefully everybody's got a copy they can look at. I'm just going to go through page by page and go through relatively quickly, and then if there's questions at the end, we'll pick them up there. Or actually, questions anytime you might have them. On the first page, go to the chart in the middle, which is, and I should point out, these are all numbers from Smith International, so they're Smith Travel, so they're January through July numbers or calendar year numbers, not fiscal numbers like we usually look at. So for the first 7 months of the year, which takes us through the month of July here, it's very interesting, very nice. In terms of occupancy, which to me is kind of the key measure, Morro Bay posted the largest gain of any reporting organization of a little over 7%, and we actually gained about 2 percentage points on the county, which is, I think, one of the goals that we've been after. Interestingly enough, at the same time, we posted the lowest increase in ADR, but the combination of that small increase in ADR and occupancy gave us back to the highest increase in RevPAR for the seven-month period. So I think whatever you can say, some things are working pretty well for us right now. The number just to the right of that 9.76 increase in RevPAR, there's $11,117,000. That's the amount of revenue that was earned by hoteliers in Morro Bay for that seven-month period. We'll come back to that in a second. What I've added to this page is some what-if scenarios. And some of this is geared a little bit to what Carl was talking about last night, which was target setting. Maybe we ought to be looking at some numbers off this page to come up with targets for our business plan for next year, which we'll do not too far down the road. Just walking straight down the what-if chart, I said, okay, what if occupancy did not go up, but we got the 2.43% increase in ADR, what would that do to revenue? So instead of the $11,117,000, we'd have grown to $10,362,000, or a relatively nominal increase. If you reverse that and said ADR did not increase and occupancy did increase, the amount it actually did, you can see about $700,000 of our growth was caused by the actually increase in occupancy. Then I said, how much, if occupancy did not increase, how much growth in ADR would we have to recorded to increase, to report about the same amount of revenue to the hoteliers? And as it turns out, we'd have had to grow our ADR about $10 with no increase in occupancy to get the same result we actually achieved. And vice versa, if we had no increase in ADR, what would we have to post in occupancy increase to get the same result in revenue? And we would have to have gone to about 62% occupancy. So it's I thought it was just interesting to look at it one way or the other to see which, how far you'd have to go on which side to get the same kind of growth. Going all the way down to the last bottom three lines, actually go all the way to the absolute bottom line, because what I did there is I said, if we increased our occupancy was the same level as the county and we had the same ADR as the county, what would our revenue be? And as you see at the very bottom on the right, instead of the $11,117,000 that we posted, if we just equaled the county, we would have delivered a little over $16 million, an increase of almost $5 million to the hoteliers in Morro Bay. So, again, setting targets, maybe one of those targets we look at is we can't control occupancy, we can't control ADR necessarily, but maybe we can set a revenue target that we want to reach on behalf of the collective hoteliers in the town.
And this is just off the hoteliers' receipts, correct? This
correct.
Is not RV parks and trailer. This isn't total TOT, or is this total TOT?
This actually is total TOT.
Total TOT. So yeah. It is not just the hoteliers.
Two good points. That's one good point. We'll talk about that in a chart going down farther. And secondly, just kind of in the back of your mind, keep in your mind that our occupancy at 55% versus the county 67%, we're roughly 20% below the county. The 20% is the key on that. If you move to the second page, this is where we break. It's same title. It's the motel receipts, lodging receipts. And then we break out the vacation rentals and the RV parks. But this is just where, and we're looking at receipts by quarter. So again, the whole purpose in this one, well, a couple of purposes, but one was the assessment we earn is based only on motel receipts. The TOT the city collects are on total receipts. And if you look at the low point, which is in 2009, our motel revenues have increased about almost $2.9 million per year. At the same time, vacation rental and RV park rentals receipts have increased by about 50%. I mean, it's a massive growth there, very impressive growth. The city benefits from that. We don't. I suspect that those two industries probably improve their results based on our coattails. Any questions on that page?
Well, you know what I would like to also see, especially since Slo County is banning VRBOs, I would like to see the numbers. Yeah, Slo City. I would like to see the numbers of how many permitted VRBOs there were and how that has increased. It would be interesting, because if that's increased, then that attributes also to the increase in what they bring in, and then we can calculate that percentage themselves.
Let me check. I think the city could probably give us.
But also we all benefit from the TOT, because when we get money from the city portions of the regional funds, that comes out of all the TOT. So there is some benefit to us. So.
Right. I agree with you, Jane. I wanted to point out that there is some benefit to us through the general fund money to support the visitor center and to support regional marketing. Additionally, I used to, as chair, always kind of keep my finger on how many vacation rentals there were. And when the economy tanked in 2009, vacation rentals are typically second homes, typically, or a unit behind a first home, like a granny unit or something. And so those declined quite a bit, and the number dropped. Last year, the number was roughly 120, and I think it was like 122 or 123. And I had just about a month and a half ago or a month ago sent a note to the city to just so I could, when we look at TOT, so I could understand the figures better. I sent a note to the city, and there's 158 registered vacation rentals right now. Mm. And I do have the number somewhere for how many transient RV spaces there are, but I don't have it off the top of my head. But I could get it to you.
You know, just, I don't know if you noticed, but San Luis Obispo does not allow vacation rentals in their city. And I was just curious about when the TBID was formed, why, I mean, do most TBIDs don't require their vacation rentals to pay the assessment?
That's a good question. When we formed, Michelle and Karen were there, and there was, so this goes all the way back, the history on it, and this is just a rough, very rough history. The TBID first came forward through the county VCB. The idea was to have vacation rentals, RV parks, or transient RV spaces, campgrounds, and hotel motels. When that was not able to be moved through as a full-on county bid because there were so many constituents. I mean, think about the unincorporated county right now has 700 vacation rentals as constituents right now, just the Wine Coast Country County, whatever it's called. So for us in Morro Bay, when we stood up before council and said we want to move forward with our own thing, just a Morro Bay T-bid, there were some RV park owners came forward and said, we'd like you to not include us. And the reason why is because Morro Bay is uniquely surrounded by state park campgrounds. They do not charge a TOT at all, so we're already at a 10% business disadvantage against them. And the city council said, okay, we won't include you. And there were vacation rentals that stepped forward and said, we don't want to be included. The reason we don't want to be included is because the outlying county, Los Osos and Cayucas, has a 9% TOT, and you're going to put us at 13. That's a 4% business disadvantage, and the city council's decision was that they would not be included and that it would be hotels, motels, and the hotels, motels did not protest that, so we move forward.
Right. Kind of, you know, I'm just curious. I know we're talking about the report right now, but I'm just curious.
So, but that can be revisited. I think that that's an important issue. It can be revisited. I know that in Grover Beach, they do not allow VRBOs. I know that we pay for advertising out of the 3% that also allows for... Well, let's put it this way. They allow VRBOs, but they're not permitted yet, and they're looking at permitting them in Grover Beach, per the council person that I met at the Hearst Castle. But anyway, I think we need to revisit some of these things. You know, we'll get legal counsel on that. Right. So we'll get legal counsel on that, and then we can go back to the city.
Okay, go for it, John.
Okay, next page, which is Morro Bay by season. And what's interesting, a couple things interesting here, but if you look at every quarter or every season, most recent season, we're at record numbers for every season. So in every category. So in occupancy, the last four seasons have all been records. Same thing in ADR and same thing in RevPAR. So across the board, everything is tracking in the right direction. I would think if we talk about target setting, we should look at target setting by quarter or by season, because we need to focus on the shoulder and off seasons, and this is where we'd source the target numbers from, I think. The next page, forget, because that's the annual numbers, and we won't look at that until the next meeting. The transient occupancy tax report. To me, this is just another example of how we just move down the road of absurdity around here. You know, in 2011, the city's budget for TOT was $1,850,000. We did $1,868,000, so it was pretty close. Last year, you know, it improved in 2012. Last year, the city's budget for TOT was $1,905,000, and we did $2,229,000. So we exceeded budget by $324,000, which, once again, in my mind, disappeared into the black hole someplace. Although we did $2,229,000 last year in TOT, the city has budgeted this year $2 million. Our forecast based on our own budget says we will generate $2,224,000 in TOT for the city this year. So we will have a surplus generated for the city of $424,000. So if the city budget is balanced today and everybody comes in on budget, at the end of next year, at the end of this year, we should have a $424,000 surplus, so everybody out there can expect to have their streets paved or something like that with proceeds from the growth in TOT. I just think we ought to tag that right now, so we can look forward to those city improvements generated by TOT. And now let's go to the last page. See, I'm trying to go through this pretty quick for you guys. Sorry, this one got really small to get onto one page, but these are the numbers that came from the VCB. They collect the TOT numbers, and these are total TOT numbers for each city, so it includes vacation rentals and RV parks. It compares 2013 to 2012, so it's the full year for every city in the county. Arroyo Grande comes in with the largest increase in TOT. However, they had a major property come online for the full year of last year, so that skews their numbers quite a bit. But if you really focus on Pismo, SLO City, SLO County, Paso Robles, and ourselves, which would be the big five, we tied Paso Robles at a TOT increase of 10.2%. Pismo Beach came in at 6.2, SLO County at 8.9, and SLO City at 6.3. So I think, again, everything in the TOT report for the quarter is a very positive indication, and once again, we're right up there at the top of the roll as far as growth in total TOT in comparison to the rest of the cities in the county. The bottom part of this chart, which may look a little bit funny, And I've got to acknowledge Homer Alexander, who helped consult on this a little bit to come up with some thoughts. But what I was trying to figure out is, for the cities that are on Highway 101, you would think they would have something of a business benefit or advantage in terms of business traveler and in terms of probably people who just get tired driving from L.A. to San Francisco and decide to spend the night, and so they drop off in San Luis Obispo and stay in the local motel and get started early again tomorrow. So I was trying to figure out, how much is that? What is that advantage worth? What is the, let's just call it, the business traveler benefit worth to the cities along Highway 101? So what I did was I took the big five cities, and we've got their TOT numbers by month. So I took each city's TOT number by month and determined what percentage of the total TOT each one of those months represented, and then compared them to each other. And what came out is really not what I expected. Because what you see, and that's why I actually did 2 years, and it came out identical for both years. And what you get, number one, is that Morro Bay and Pismo Beach are almost identical in terms of our annual percentage change in growth in TOT. So We've almost got the exact same numbers in January, the exact same numbers in July, and the same numbers back in December. SLO County is just traveling to a drumbeat that's totally different than anybody else. They start out similar. They drop off in June for some unknown reason. And then their summer, their high season, continues through October before they stop dropping back down and looking like normal like the rest of us. And then SLO City and Paso Robles, again, are almost identical. So I'd be curious, anybody thinking about this, why those would be so identical. The only thing I can think of is, one thing is I think of, not the only thing, is Carl last week mentioning strategic partnerships, and he mentioned specifically Pismo Beach. And maybe we're a lot more like Pismo Beach than we think we are, because I think what's happening is if you look at the numbers, I think what's happening is the business traveler is staying in San Luis Obispo and in Paso Robles. They're not staying in the county, obviously, because the business traveler is not going to Cambria and San Simeon. If their business is in North County, they're in Paso. If they're in South County, they're in SLO. Why doesn't Pismo pick up any? I think for two reasons is I don't believe Pismo has any, you know, national chains, courtyard, the business motels, the Courtyard by Marriott's, the possibly the Best Westerns, the Hampton Inns, those kind of guys. One. Two, you don't stay at the Pismo motels by the pier because for a business traveler that's inconvenient. And the business traveler is probably on a per diem or something, so they're not going to stay at the Cliffs because it's too expensive. So Pismo and Morro Bay look more alike than we would think we would for some, I think, kind of unusual reasons. But if you look at the numbers, I've done a little bit more work since I printed this the other day. Homer and I were talking about it, and if you look at the winter quarter, the off season, and you total the percentages for those three months, or expand it to,
is that the first quarter?
First quarter, mm-hmm. Yeah. Or if you also throw in December and April, so you've got 5 months of off season. You add those up and divide them by the number of months for each of the cities. You come up with Paso and SLO have about 1 percentage point or 20% more business in those months than Morro Bay and Pismo Beach. And that was what I was saying. Remember the 20% from the first page. Mm-hmm. Our occupancy is about 20% less on average than the entire county. And I think the 20, you know, this is not real scientific here. There's a lot of speculation going on here. But it seems reasonable to say that the core business traffic that lands in in Paso and SLO is about 20% of their total business, which gives them the 20% level of average occupancy higher than we get in Morro Bay on an annual basis. I think that makes sense. I'm not 100%, but that's the best sense we could make of what the numbers were saying.
I think the other thing, too, I was just thinking, you know, where we have a higher percentage along with Pismo during the summer months is I think possibly we get a lot more families with children that
we're affordable.
Yeah, and that we are affordable and that we, that's when they vacation during those 3 months. So, but it sure is... would be nice to get those others, the higher percentage in those off months prior to summer and after, rather than just getting, you know, a big shot for those 3 months in summer and then, you know, more of a dramatic drop off to kind of level out those peaks and valleys. So,
you know, the other thing that I want to say is you're talking about people that stop off in, off 101, which we are not. So if people are traveling from Los Angeles or San Diego up Northern California, Thanksgiving, Christmas, all these holidays, they're not going to veer off to Highway 1. So they're going to capture the hotels or off Highway 101 are going to capture. That's why events focused, you know, in those shoulder seasons are going to be really important to draw attention to us, even when people have no plans to stay here. you know, during that travel period, because it is a high traffic period. It'd be interesting to compare this with traffic reports on 101 also.
Yeah, we're going to have to, I mean, again, the kind of the theme of the report is targets, picking up on what Carl was saying. But maybe, I mean, we're at a 20% disadvantage because we don't have that casual traveler and the business traveler. So we've got to make that up. And the question is, how do we do it? And I think it's events and activities is probably the answer we're all coming with. So we need really something almost every week or at least every other week through the shoulder, much of the shoulder and off season. Now, if you look at the fall shoulder season, I mean, we've got it with the Margarita Festival followed by the Harbor Festival and the Oyster Festival coming up. I mean, we got three biggies in there already. So the fall shoulder season seems to be coming together. So I think need to start seriously, very hard thinking about what we're gonna do for the winter off season and the spring shoulder.
May I? San Luis Obispo County, as they run quite a bit higher than us in that fall shoulder season, I think can also be attributed to the Europeans hitting Highway 1. And something interesting happened to me at the hotel. I was working the desk, and I had some Europeans come in and say, can you map us? Can you print a map for us, Highway 1, from Morro Bay to Monterey? And I said, sure, no problem. So I went into Google, and where it says, you know, maps, I put in Highway 1, Morro Bay, Highway 1, Monterey. It diverts you back to San Luis Obispo up the 101 as the main route. The secondary route diverts you across 46 and onto I-5 and up and across to Monterey. Nowhere on there, and I plugged it in, U.S. Highway 1, Route 1, Morro Bay to Monterey, multiple ways, and Google Maps has Morro Bay diverted, does not show us as being on Highway 1. It's a key element in what's going to be a failure in terms of people looking at the route in Europe or in New York and booking places to stay. So I tried to immediately send them a message, which they said to me, you've sent us too many words, because I sent more than 10 words. So someone has to, this is 2 days ago, someone's got to get in contact with Google. They will show the route. If you plug in Big Sur Hearst Castle to Monterey, but they won't show the route from Morro Bay. So it's very, very interesting if you try and plug it in on Highway 1. They will show Highway 1 from Morro Bay to Hearst Castle, but you have to be plugging in multiple routes in order to get the route all the way up. Additionally, when you ask for just Highway 1 across California, it shows Big Sur, Julia Pfeiffer State Park, does not show Hearst Castle as a point of interest, shows Cambria as a point of interest, and Los Osos as a point of interest. We are not a point of interest. So we have some work to do in terms of where we're at, I think, to grab those shoulder travelers, because those are the travelers that are just, they're the scenic travelers, the nature travelers, the travelers that come in the fall and want to use Morro Bay as a base, do 1 day of wine tasting, 1 day at Hearst Castle, and 1 day exploring this area here. And they are multiple day midweek travelers, and we've got to find a way to capture them. So that the European travel could be one of the reasons why they have such a high, because they do like to stay in San Simeon, Hearst Castle. And the other thing I would say here is we have to remember that Avila is part of the unincorporated county, and they have the Dolphin Bay Resort. And my husband flipped me his telephone the other night and said, check that rate out. They had a $500 rate posted for a night. And so that's going to, you know, if that place at about 100 rooms is selling out, easily that one mechanism can hit those county numbers up very, very quickly. Just thoughts.
You know, I think you're right on to something with that European traveler, though. I have a flag of Best Westerns. Best Western, we get a lot of foreign travelers because they're all around the world. My Best Western property is always very strong in September and October. And it's because of, I think, that European traveler. Everybody goes up to Hearst Castle and travels the one. So I think it's really, really important for us to figure out how to get us on that Google Maps, because with these going on every day, and I'm going to look at Rick, we'll ask him this later, this is all the people are using nowadays. Mm-hmm. People are not using anything other than their iPads and iPhones to get from point A to point B, and if we're not listed on there, we're really missing the boat easily. So I think that's a really good point, and I think it's something we need to look at. I think, again, it backs into what Carl said, that niche market. Obviously, we cannot go and advertise in Europe, but how can we capture them while they're here? And I think it's an interesting thing, too, with the government shutdown right now. We've been much busier in this county because of all the state parks. All the Europeans are around. It's you go around, you hear German, you hear all these other, you're not hearing American. It's because you've got a lot of those European travelers. So I think that's something we need to try to dial in on. Anything else?
No, that was it.
Okay. Any other comments for John? Great report.
Yeah, terrific report, John. Thanks for all your work. Every quarter we say the same thing to you, which is thank you for all your work on this. Super appreciated.
Thank you.
And it gives us some goals. I think when we bring back the Carl Roboto thing, we need to bring this back too.
Yeah.
And use this as part of the mechanism for our goal setting.
And I think we need to tap in on like that chess club in November and the bird festival in January and get, like Jane saying, we need to be encouraging these off-season events as much as possible because those are what bring people to the area.
John, I'd like to thank you for incorporating the multiple years this year and for incorporating it prior to TBID formation and obviously since. I think that's a wealth of information.
Just add one thing to this. You've got 900 rooms here. So you got every day you have 900 room nights, and you multiply that, so you got 27,000 room nights in Morro Bay every month on average. So if you're selling in our worst month, if we're running at 30%, we're still selling 8,000 or 9,000 rooms a month. I mean, that's still a very impressive number. There's a lot of people that are still coming here at our worst time. And then, if Michelle says, if you get out of a chess club of another 50 rooms for three nights or something like that, those numbers start adding up pretty quickly.
Okay, great job. Moving on to financial report. I'm actually going to defer this to the Bureau because it's on the Bureau's agenda. So I'm going to actually pull this item and we'll address it at the Bureau because we're just about to start the Bureau meeting. So that will get deferred over to the Bureau. And then we'll move on to declaration of future agenda items.
Too early to declare. We have a whole quarter to make a list.
Yeah. So does anybody have any at this point? Jane, I'll just start with you. Do you have any future? No?
No.
Joan? Karen?
None other than that I hope this quarterly TOT report will be on each agenda on each quarter.
Nick?
Well, did we want to, maybe this isn't the right board, but, we talked a little bit about the vacation rentals and that kind of thing. Is there... do we want to look at that again next quarter or just?
We can address it. I think it needs to kind of come from the city. And, and Joan will know a little bit more, but how the TBID came formed was the hoteliers coming together.
Mm-hmm.
It was the hoteliers that kind of started the rampage. Mm-hmm. So, I guess that wasn't the right word, but started it. I guess we can shout out that we think it's important for the city to look into it, but, they kind of have to have a little bit of a will.
They have to start the ball rolling.
Right. The vacation rentals need to have the will to want to do it, too.
Yeah, I would be uncomfortable, personally, as a hotelier, saying to the restaurants, we're going to advise you on how to form a TBID,
right.
Nick.
So they'd have to get the ball rolling themselves.
They have to get the ball rolling. It's got to be a grassroots effort, and right. If they want it, they'll come forward. If they don't, mm-hmm. they don't, It's okay. Not... up to us.
I do think it's maybe important that we show the numbers and show the results and show that obviously what we're doing is working and bringing in revenue to the city. So
if they want to do it, they should.
And then, yeah, but I think
And also, it seems like the vacation rentals is more of a splintered group. There's not a real core. They're just, here's somebody that has a house and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. All right.
But the restauranters, Nick, they've got a great leader.
I think that if we make a request to the city, okay, as a body, and ask them to look at incorporating VRBOs into the 3% TOTs, because the VRBOs are being represented by the real estate brokers, many of them, and they are trying to get overnight stays, and we are advertising for overnight stays. I think that we can ask the city. It's the city's decision, but we can ask the city.
If the board wills it and wants to ask the city, I would just let the board know that that would also probably change our ordinance in terms of how our ordinance looked. There's two ways that a TBID can look, and our TBID was placed in prior to the change in the ordinance through the state of California, and so that would change how our TBID would look. I'm not sure that we can add someone in, but they could form their own umbrella, probably. You know, that's how they would do it, is they would form a separate umbrella, and we could be conjoined somehow through the Tourism Bureau.
Since we're getting into full discussion, I think what we'll do is we'll just table this on as maybe just a discussion item, and then we could talk about it all and get into some of the nitty-gritty and bring some history back and maybe reach out to council a little bit too as well. Okay, any other future agenda items? John, I ended at Nick, so no? Okay. Okay, I think then I will look for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor? Aye. Okay, so we're going to adjourn. Second? I don't know if we ever.
You need a second.
Nick seconded? Seconded. Okay. So we're adjourned, and all in favor?
Aye.
I'm ready to leave. All opposed? John's always wanting to stick around. Motion carries 5-0-1, nay. And we're going to take a 2-minute break, and then we'll start the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau. We have 2 minutes. I'm watching the clock. Okay, so we are live. Yeah. I would like to welcome everyone to the Morro Bay Tourism Bureau meeting. Today's Thursday, October 10th. For the record, it is 9:50 a.m. No. I will call this meeting to order, and we will open it up for public comment. Go ahead.
I'm Johnny Biagini, Biagini Marketing Strategies, also known as Big Marketing. And I just wanted to say that I attended the Carl Roboto session last week, and I've known Carl for many, many years, and I always enjoy his frank discussions and presentations, and I thought it was very good for many people to hear it. Probably a lot of the things should have been happening all along, but let's not go backwards. What I want to know is, what are the steps that this board is going to take to take his information and go forward? Thank you.
Good morning. John Solu, resident Morro Bay, business owner. Again, I know Johnny talked about it, but you guys were the largest contributors to the Morro Bay Harbor Festival. We thank you for that, and I'll tell you, we couldn't have done it without your contribution, and we spent it in marketing like you wanted us to, and we will have a post-con report to you probably within the next couple weeks so you guys can see exactly what we did. The other thing is, I'm going to go back and re-ask again. I know that I was told after I made a comment last month regarding this email blitz for specials, that 50% over 50% were bad You know, if we have 10,000 email addresses, 5,000 bounce back, I don't know why we can't just email the 5,000 people and let at least 5,000 people know that we have specials. Again, in October, I have not seen any email blitzes go out. It's now month four. We're about to go to November. We should be working on November's email blitz and getting the specials together to do those. Because, you know, as John showed us all the reports, you know, we're going to start hitting the bricks and start going downhill for the rest of the year in regards to occupancy, and every bit helps. So who cares if there's 5,000 bad emails out of 10,000? Let's just send them out. Thank you.
Okay, Jane has a public comment.
I have a public comment. Do I have to go up there? Hi, I've got a public comment, Jane Beeman, TVID, Bayfront Inn. My public comment is that I actually wanted to thank the Harbor Festival again, but this is a new thank you. They were very innovative on the way they tried to sell their tickets to the people within the industry. And I was one of the hotels that took them up on that. And I thought that was marvelous. I did end up giving all the tickets to my guests. And that boosted their attendance. My people would then go ahead and spend money there. They came back to me and wanted to buy more tickets for the next day. And I said, nope, sorry, I got to buy them. So I would suggest that people within the industry and whatever, get on the bandwagon, help Harborfest. That's our event. And it's a good one, and there's great people running it, and the advertising that went on was great, and I'm hoping it'll be better. So that's all I wanted to say. So I applaud you guys back there. Thank you.
Okay, any other further public comment? Okay, seeing none, we'll move over to board announcements. Jane, do you have any board announcements?
No, I made it last time. So hopefully okay. You're all still watching.
Joan.
I split up my board announcements last time. I do have one. I'd just like to announce to the community of Morro Bay that the Morro Bay 50th Celebration Committee will be meeting October 28th. That's Monday, October 28th at 4 p.m. at the community center, usually in one of the breakout rooms, either in the community room or the back room on the senior center side. So please, we would love to have people who would like to get involved with Morro Bay's 50th celebration to come on out, and some of our groups will be coming back with their reports and ideas on how you can get involved, or how if your neighborhood or your block wants to do something special, we'd love to hear from you and just kind of envelop that in. So again, October 28th, 4 p.m. at the Community Center, Morro Bay's 50th. And we invite you all. And I would also like to just say thank you to all of the businesses and the volunteers who came down to help at the Harbor Festival. The volunteers worked their fannies off in some pretty formidable heat throughout the day to make that event go off. And they worked pretty hard over the course of 2 days. And the tents went up and the tents broke down and the place broke down, and the businesses along the waterfront, I think, were fairly happy with the event and were pretty easy to work with and understand the flexibility that this is a community event and a community tradition. And I think from being involved on the outskirts, all the conversations were really positive, and the bands were amazing. It was the best musical lineup. It was terrific.
Karen? Nick? John?
I have a couple announcements. Stick around for the executive director's report, and we'll talk about the Carl Roboto steps of what she's going to recommend, and then we can take action down the line. And I believe it's 2 months. We didn't do the database. It was just August and September. We did pay for July, and we just did October. Rick will touch on that later. And also... Yeah, October just went out, my understanding. But look for the ED report.
Also wanted to announce congratulations to Peter. He is getting married this Sunday, so congratulations on his upcoming wedding. So I want to announce that as well, because that's always excitement, life-changing. And also, I want to back in on Harborfest. I did hear a lot of positive feedback about the music as well, how great the music was, and the setup this year being positive. And I heard that from a handful of guests. So I thought that was really some positive for Harborfest as well. So those changes you guys made, I think, were a good thing. We will now move on to, oh, and then a reminder of Oyster Festival. I think I plugged them at the last one, but I'll plug again. Oyster Festival, October 19th. Moving on to approval of the minutes. Everybody should have received September 12th's minutes. I'll look for a motion for those.
I have a change on the minutes.
Okay.
Or just something that was missed. I had asked during the ED's report that we have a report come back to us, information regarding the signage, getting the banner down at the visitor center, and the entrance sign from Highway 41 that said "Take Morro Bay Boulevard Exit," and the back of the white signs, if we could do anything with those, and I don't see that in here anywhere, so I just wanted to make sure that it gets noted for file that I asked for a report on that.
Okay, so that's going to be under presentation of executive director's report.
Right, in the discussion after that. I had asked for that.
So I guess we can just throw it in there. I don't recall reading anything on it, so I guess we could just add it in as a bullet point after G, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H.
Sure. Excuse me.
And bear with me, everyone. I'm just writing it so that we can agree. So Joan requested a report regarding signage update.
Removal of the banner at the visitor center and what was going on with the directional signage and if we could get our logo or something added to make them the white banners a little more artful or something that gave direction to the visitor center, the white.
So the city banners.
The white banners that are around town, yeah.
City banners for visitor center.
Mm-hmm.
Don't we have to list the people that are absent or no?
I think that was listed. It was listed under Member Hawkes added that members Beeman and Amini would be absent for this meeting. So it's just a little different. It's just not at the top, which we could add it to the top if you prefer while we're making amendments. Okay. So up at the top, then, we would put absent Amini and Beeman. We'll just take that line and move it up there. Joan, was there anything else? Signage update, removal banner at the visitor center, city banners, visitor center, and that was it?
Yeah, the city entrance sign, city banners, and
city
the
entrance,
banner,
like.
The now open banner across the visitor center.
City entrance, okay. And you wanted a report back from the EB. Okay, anybody else see any other changes? John.
The motion that Karen made, I think it should have included also, and I don't know if the motion had it, but we needed it in there, was $10,000 for the Shop Local program.
It wasn't included.
Is
it our website?
Well, if there was the budget, it was under website, but there was also included the billboard and social media. It was an amendment to the budget which increased the budget for the website, but also.
I don't remember discussing moving $10,000 into Shop Local.
Okay.
I don't remember discussing that in the discussion. We had a line item with. So we had a line item for Shop Local, but no.
No
dollar
amount.
I don't remember that coming up
okay.
in the discussion, John.
Okay.
Does anybody else recall the 10,000 Shop Local? I remember. Oh, that's right. Beeman wasn't here. Joan.
We just need to do something with that at some point then.
Right, because if you look at our current budget, it has a shop local line item with no dollar amount to it. And I do recall, I remember in our weekly discussions, it was $10,000 was needed to be on there.
I don't want to get into a discussion at minutes. If it's not a recollection, then what we need to do is address it probably during our budget conversation.
Or we can go back and listen to the tape. That's what's so great about being back live. We can go back and look at the tape. Because I feel like I remember there's something briefly, but I remember talking about it, but I don't remember the exact motion. So why don't we not approve these minutes? Go back and look at the tape to that specific.
I'm sure I didn't include anything about shop local in that motion.
Regional marketing? Would you have said region? Yeah. See, I can't even remember it, so I don't even want to get into a conversation.
Yeah, but under website is also the social media, the PR, and we were doing all the budget stuff all at the same time when we were dealing with that. So if you look under there, there was other stuff besides just the website that we did talk about. So let's not approve these minutes. Let's make the two amendments that we all agree on already about the app changing and that report. Let's go back and look at the minutes.
I don't understand why we're going back. I made the motion. I didn't include anything about local in there.
Okay.
So
I guess we'll go back and look at them. Well, then if you guys are comfortable approving it.
I would agree that we probably have to bring that back to make that budget amendment.
Again, I'd like to make a recommendation that we discuss this during the budget discussion.
So you guys, what are you guys going to do with the minutes?
The minutes,
I'm looking for a motion.
Okay, I move that we accept the minutes with the correction that Jane would like to make, bringing the attendance issue to the top of the minutes, and with the addition of H under the director's report that was previously discussed.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. So it's going. And one abstention. So okay. We're going to have a 4 in favor, 1 opposed, and 1 abstaining.
Okay.
So minutes approved. And moving on to presentation of executive director's report, Karen Moss.
Morning, board, audience. Are we queued up here? Thanks very much. We'll start with Sabre, which was a laborious couple of months getting ready for that, but we opened with a very successful adventure tour. We met at the Visitors Center on Friday morning. We had a catered reception with champagne and breakfast burritos. It was a sellout. It was hosted by the Sunset editor, Peggy Northrup. Andrea Luker and Janice Peters joined us as tour guides. We had our little brunch at the Visitor Center, and then we went up for a lovely tour of the Shanley Ranch, and thank you to the Shanley family. We toured the ranch, and then we had a sit-down lunch, and you'll see some of the photos of Peter right here, multifaceted with his apron on, serving the public. It was a very nice morning, and we got some really good feedback. Then on Saturday, we had our booth at Sabre. Our theme, as you can see, is the Central Coast is your oyster, Morro Bay is your pearl. We carried that through our rack card and our little giveaway of a special pearl necklace that we did as a part of our Enter to Win. And you'll see Peter, Lazaro, and myself. We had some really good volunteers for the weekend. We sampled oysters. That was a really big draw to the booth. We had Mark Tognazzini out there with his boat filled with fish, and we captured names and an Enter to Win that can be added to our database. We did our Battle of the Bay, and we're going to show you the video that John Sorgenfrey produced for us. The participants, as you will recall, are David Wilson of Grape Encounters Radio and Kirk Sowell.
Thank you.
Just as a little backstory, David has a radio show on Crush Radio. The goal is for, you know, when we do Battle of the Bay, to let the chef keep that trophy so that they can proudly display it in their restaurant. Are we going back to the... Oh, okay. So here's our Battle of the Bay video that was online, and it was shown throughout the day prior to the event.
Do we want to maybe keep, you want to
come back to this? Or
we'll come back to it. So why don't, we'll let Karen keep talking.
Should
and
we
then
just
we'll
keep
come
going?
Back and do
All
the,
right.
We'll come back and do the video.
Okay. Just some recent publicity that was secured by our office. We did the Avocado Margarita Festival morning at the morning show on KCOY. We coordinated that morning show for the Harbor Festival, and I understand that they did a show from Carla's restaurant. I haven't seen the tape or I don't know the details, but that was to pre-promote the Harbor Festival. Through our partnership with Grape Encounters Radio, we were able to set up interviews for the Harbor Festival, Oyster, Battle of the Bay, and just continue promoting tourism in Morro Bay. We worked closely with the Tribune on photo coverage for Harbor, Avocado. We're working closely with them on Oyster as well. And we brought in the editor of Monterey Weekly, who did an overview of all of our events and some retail experiences throughout Morro Bay. We're working closely with him again on the Oyster Festival promotion. We have just issued a press release on Oyster Festival that focuses on their new special Bradley Ogden dinner, which will occur on Friday night. It's a upscale tour to the Abalone Ranch in Cayucas, and then a return for a special gourmet dinner at the Inn at Morro Bay. So we're promoting that. We've had we're also working on the Stranded in Morro Bay Vintage Trailer Rally, October 25th through the 27th. They're having a wine reception and an open house. They've been in touch with us to assist with some promotion, and we're kind of reworking their materials to see if we can get some media coverage despite this 11th hour nature. This Saturday, we're hosting a what's called Fitcation. You've heard me speak about this before. It's 33 women bloggers coming to Morro Bay for kayaking. They'll be greeted by myself and Sharon Bufo. We'll give them goodie bags of snacks and promotional materials. Last Saturday, we hosted 50 seniors from the Sun City Tour Group. They were bused into the area, had a catered lunch at the Yacht Club hosted by Lolo's. I'm told they hit that bar pretty hard and really had a fabulous time. They decided to stay a couple extra hours, and they went out on a boat cruise. Thank you to Sharon for hosting that. We've also been very helpful with the Summerlee wedding party that's taking place this weekend at the Inn at Morro Bay. We've worked closely with the bride's family to provide the guests with over 30 packets of Morro Bay information, contacts at the visitor center, local trip planning, directions, amenities. Our social media report. Thank you, Johnny, for mentioning Travis Ford. He's one of our contractors. He's been very helpful to us with all of our events. He specifically focuses on events. And is the report up there? It's a little difficult to read, and I'll be more than happy to send this out to anyone who's interested if they want to see the specifics on some of these events. But just as an example, in the quarter from August 1st through October 8th, With Morro Bay, we increased the likes over 400 from 5193 to 5593, with our best single day reach being 76,893. With Harbor Fest, we increased the likes from 6,556 to 6,765, with our best daily reach of 3,842. For the Avocado and Margarita Fest, we increased the likes from 228 to 403. And from Dahlia Days, we increased the likes from 0 to 56, with the best single days to Facebook and Twitter to support our social media campaigns. This same Central Valley banner ad promotion that we've been doing for the Avocado Margarita Festival, with over 50,000 ads served, we had 97 clicks, which was a 19% click rate. 8% is average. With the Harbor Festival, we had 56,000 ads served with 106 click-through rate, which was a 19% response rate. And the Oyster Festival ads are still running right now with a 19% click-through rate. We've been increasing names to our database all the time. We have exposure at all of the big events. We were at Avocado. We collected names at Savor. We collected names at Harbor. We are fine-tuning our database. Rick will talk more to you about conversions and setting targets. To respond to Mr. Solo, we have, in fact, done a Discover Autumn in Morro Bay e-blast, which references our specials and deals. It did go out last week. We did pay our agency through the end of July to do the specials and deals. You are correct in saying that they didn't go out for 2 months, but it wasn't 4 months. And we are... Well, we'll have to look into that because, you know, we...
I didn't get it either.
Really? I'm a little surprised.
And I didn't either, so...
You know, I don't have the answer for you. I'm surprised to hear this, but we'll take a look at that today.
I know there's been some discussion about the format that these blasts are going out under by the server, that certain servers restrict the amount of recipients, I think, to different blasts. They cut them off at a certain point, and it could be that that's the problem. But, you know, like I said, I didn't get it. Joan said she didn't. So Jane didn't get it. So, I mean, there's some kind of a problem there.
Right, and you and I have had this conversation before, and I really, you know, it'll show with our constant contact if someone didn't receive it or it bounced back to us, and none of your names have been on that. So we need to do a little research. But, you know, definitely it went out last week. Yesterday we sent out an Oyster Festival blast that went out to the list that we picked up at Savor. Those were, brand new, clean list. So, I don't have an answer for you on why you haven't received it, and we'll certainly look into that immediately because we recognize how important it is to do this regularly, and it is our intention to be doing this monthly to our targeted e-blast list. As far as the Carl Roboto presentation, we have had some really good response to Carl's presentation, and maybe you saw an article that was in the Bay News giving my personal email address. Thank you, Neil. But anyway, so I was barraged with early morning email. I have a lot of new friends wanting to give me their opinion at 5 a.m., but there's a lot of interest in this. And there's been a lot of interest from the city. There's a lot of interest from the Chamber Economic Development Committee. And my recommendation is that we put together a town hall kind of meeting. We bring together all of the elements. You know, a lot of people have said that in the past, a lot of expensive studies have been done and there's been no follow-up. So my suggestion is we get on Carl's calendar. As you know, he's very busy and hard to get a date with him, but I'm looking at maybe we'll have some downtime in November. We can bring him back and talk about, you know, when he talks about the marketing plan being a dialogue and an open dialogue with a lot of entities, it would be my suggestion that we collaborate in the cost of bringing Carl back, and we do some brainstorming with economic development, the chamber, and the city. I am just embarking on a Shop Local campaign with a committee comprised of members of the Economic Development Committee, the city, and this campaign will roll out. It's rolling out as soon as we complete a community map that we've been working on. It seems like a lifetime. It's a work in progress. We've never had something like this. We don't have it at the Visitor Center. It will be all of Morro Bay that will be on this map. That's the beginning of the Shop Local campaign. We're also going to be, the second phase of the campaign rolls out in early November with a partnership with Tolosa Press, with a bounce-back coupon program, print advertising, holiday promotions that will dovetail with the lighted boat parade and a Dine Local campaign publishing in their holiday issue from November through February, which will feature the Shop Local campaign, the lighted boat, and the Bird Festival. I believe that concludes my report. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, I'm going to keep us in order. Jane, I'll start with you.
I have no questions.
Joan.
Thank you, Karen, for the report. I do have a couple of questions. I'd like us to still, I know it wasn't in the minutes, so maybe it didn't get caught, but I'd like to make sure that we get a report on what's going on with the signage, especially the banners at the Visitor Center that say now open. They're still up. And I know that signs went up for Savor that said, welcome Savor guests, and I guess they could have been cut down at the same time, but somehow that was missed. So I just want to make sure that we stay within the regulations that need to happen.
May I just mention this, Joan? We thought it would be easy to take down that banner at the same time we put the Savor thing up, but it isn't. It has to be taken down by the city, and I've made some overtures to have that done. So I did hear your message.
Okay, terrific. I appreciate that. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about creative. I, as a hotelier and as someone who has a business in town, I'd like to maybe see, instead of what we have done in the report, I'd like to see a little bit about what we're going to do in terms of some ads that we might be placing within the next quarter, even if they're online banner ads or whatnot, what creative theme and messaging we're using. And I'd like to see that because if it shows on TV, then the other businesses in town, if we're doing whatever it is, discover the little rock off the left of the rock or whatever our creative theme is going to be, then that allows us to build in terms of our specials and deals, restaurant specials. Somebody might come up with, get a little piece of that pet rock or something down at the bead shop. So I'd like to see also us showing future creative in these reports just to kind of bolster them up. And I'm wondering, I haven't seen, I saw the creative that was for Savor, but I'm wondering what creative theme we're going to be using in the next quarter, what Mental Marketing has come up with, and when we're going to see something from them.
I just want to remind you that we just approved the media budget in mm-hmm. the last meeting, and so I remember you said to John Sorgenfrey, John, go out there and start shopping, which is what we're doing right now. When we determine where we're advertising and what the size of that ad is and what the audience is in that publication, we will at that time share the creative with you. But we don't have anything purchased right now that would be utilizing different creative, so I am, taking your message to heart, but there was nothing to show you at this time that we embraced the Central Coast as your oyster, Morro Bay as your pearl, and that's what we've utilized throughout Savor and our current rack card. So when we have these other marketing opportunities, at that time I will share with you the creative.
Okay. Okay, in the past, I think why I'm asking you is to give you an idea. In the past, what we did was, even with John, we had four or five pieces of creative that came forward that we knew we were going to use throughout the year, and that allowed businesses and the community to kind of build their own personal marketing around some of the pieces that we were doing, and that's why I'm asking for them out in future rather than seeing them as a hindsight, just so you know.
Karen?
The Central Valley banner ads, what websites are that being, is that being shown on?
This is through Access Publishing, and it's a company that's called iPromote, and they have numerous different sites where they're shown. They're shown on Monster, they're shown on through Tallulah Press. There's like a series of different places where they're shown, major national sites, but they can send them into a region, and then that's where they get the click rates, and that's where they have that exposure. It's very closely targeted. I'll be more than happy to have our rep, Yvonne Brown, come to a meeting and explain to you how it works.
Okay, I guess I just want to, like, look at the banner ads, so that's why, you know, I can go to the site myself and look at them if I know what sites they're on. That's mm-hmm. why I was asking.
Okay, thus far, the only thing we've done has been relevant specifically to the events. So we've taken the sure. The graphics from the events, and we've developed a banner ad.
Okay. So you can get us a list from iPromote on what sites they are going out on, so we can
yes,
take
I can.
A look at them, like maybe if we have something coming up for the Oyster Fest or going, you know, out into the future for the boat parade or whatever.
Yes, I can do that.
That'd be great. Thank you. I know in our last meeting we finally had some resolution to the issue on reimbursement or how we were going to handle room comps. For FAMS, for sweepstakes.
There is an event.
So this was being sent out to the...
And we did that every month. Every month.
Okay.
Every month. And in if you recall, in July, we had BCA do it.
Right.
It came in-house. Mm-hmm. So we did not do August and September. Right. I was told it was sent out Monday for October. So that's what we're talking about. All right.
By the way, Michelle, I forgot to mention the Visitors Center report that I wanted to segue into Ed's presentation after, if anybody else has any questions for me, but we could then segue to Ed.
Okay. John? Okay.
I have a couple of quick questions. To bounce a question off what Nick was saying, so we're using constant, I just want to understand the process. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to understand the process. So we're using Constant Contact now to manage that database. And are we sending it out in-house, for example, is Peter sending out the blast, or do we have a contractor sending out that blast?
We had Rick Turton send out the blast, and what Peter has sent out in conjunction with me is this current email about Oyster Fest, which we put together a special database and entered it into Constant Contact. The names we got at Saver.
So we had two blasts
That's
go out.
Right.
Okay, so we did the Saver blast of the Constant Contact Oyster thing,
yes.
which was 900 people or something roughly, I think you said.
Yes.
900 names. And then the contractor did
the usual blast
for 9,000. He is shaking his head no at me right now. Rick, can you answer that for me? I really want an answer.
Yeah, I'm confused. I basically, the HTML, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but, you know, John, you know, we heard from John and Johnny over there, and you guys saying we never got the email. John and I looked at each other, we never got the email. And so I think there's some confusion here. My job was basically to build the HTML template. I sent the HTML template into Peter and Karen, and then I thought they were going to copy it and paste it into Constant Contact and send it out. I have no access to Constant Contact. So what we found out by listening to everybody here in the room is there's a whole bunch of people in this room that didn't get the email, so we got to get to the bottom of that. And so right after this meeting, I will stay here, I will get together with Peter, and we'll figure out what in the heck happened. And we'll make sure that it doesn't happen again, because this is really good feedback, because, you know, John and I are sitting there saying, hey, we never got the email, and John and Joni said, we never got the email. You guys said, so we don't know if it ever even went out or if there's a big bounce rate, if there's a Karen server problem thing that we're up against, we'll have to go over. And I promise you, I will stick around today. Since John and I drove separate cars, I can stay here as long as I can to take care of it, and I'll check on it.
I appreciate that. That's what I'm trying to get to the bottom of. I just want an answer so that we
can
resolve it and move forward.
So basically, Peter Williamson, the minute taker, as we sent out the
One of the e-blasts went to two of our databases, so we had the Discover Autumn in Morro Bay went to our GoRed database, which was in the Central Valley, and then that also went to our Menlo Park database, and then the other e-blast went to just all of our Saver collections. So, that's what was sent out. It didn't go to any of the stakeholders, the board members. I apologize. I should have added all of you to that.
But I was part of the Constant Contact database. So what I'm saying to you is, at one point, 2 years ago, I went into morrobay.org and I said, yeah, I want to sign up to receive information about Morro Bay, to be part of the Discover Morro Bay drawing, which, you know, obviously I could not win, you know. But so for those years, I continued every month to get information about Morro Bay. From July, I got the July information. August, September, and October, I have not received any information. And that's where the crux of the matter was. And it's not about me. I'm just saying, is that information going out? And it sounds like we're trying to figure that out. It's really, really, really important. I can't stress the importance to the hotels, because that's direct marketing to people who are interested in coming to Morro Bay and staying in Morro Bay. And as John pointed out, 10,000 folks out of the 27,000 rooms that we have available, if we get 500 hits, if we put it out there to 10,000, we get one hit, it's one more room than we had the night before.
And so I understand you, it was specific databases that this went out to. Okay, where in the past it's gone out to our consolidated database. And I think that's the confusion at this point. And that's what we need to get back to. I think that was the idea.
No, and I think that's what just got clarified. Yeah, yeah. Good. So we got the answers to everything.
And through the end of this month, actually in September, we had 9,000 visitors. Overall for the full year, and we're going to go over 10,000 by the end of this month. So we've gone from a monthly total of 451 to a grand total of 10,000 visitors by the end of this month. That's quite an accomplishment. Many businesses in this town don't see 10,000 customers walk through their doors. Of course, we have many visitors from the Valley, the Bay Area, and Southern California. And we've seen an exceptional number of tourists from Europe, mostly from Germany and the UK, almost every day, two or three or four, up to a half a dozen visitors from Germany. It's amazing. I don't know why they're visiting us, but they certainly love Morro Bay. But most of these European visitors are just traveling through after we question them. They're not staying here. They're going from one place to another. But when they do hit Morro Bay, they really enjoy it very much. There's been a considerable number of visitors also from the eastern U.S. as well as the central and midwestern states. Someone mentioned earlier the recent fires and the closing of our national parks has certainly helped increase stays in Morro Bay, and that's a definite, I can actually show that, because people are coming here telling us that as an alternative, they were recommended to come to the Central Coast and see California's Central Coast. They had planned to go to Yosemite or to some of the national parks, and they came here because they couldn't go there. So some of you, the hoteliers, must, as Michelle mentioned, are seeing increases because of that. The majority of the requests, as I said last month, are still for recreational activities, dining, and additional points of interest, such as Hearst Castle and the elephant seals. There are some requests for hotel and motel lodging, but it's not one of the major things that we do at the visitor center. One of the things you folks might not know that we do have at the Visitor Center is we are an official geocache station. Geocaching has become a very popular hobby around the world. And people of geocaching, if you don't know what it is, they have a GPS all over the world. They hide little trinkets and little packages in various locations, one of which is our visitor center. And there are about five or six or more here in Morro Bay, from the Rock all the way down to Tythens Park. And people from all over the country do this as a hobby. They try to find these locations. And the clues are given on the computer, on their little handheld device. And they can go around connected with the GPS and hopefully locate this particular package or GPS or geocache package or whatever's in there, and they take a trinket out, put a trinket in, and they're what they call travel bugs that travel all over the world. And these geocachers, what they do is they track that on the computer to see how far they can get their little travel bug to go. And the visitor center here in Morro Bay is an official geocache center. So that adds to our tourists that come by and try to find the visitor center. So it gives us an extra sort of push for people to find our visitor center. We still have some rack card space left, and I want to remind all the TBID members, the hoteliers, if you don't have a rack card down at our visitor center, that I certainly invite you to come down and bring one to us. We'll find a space for it. We have them down there, and we'll put them in the lodging area, so when people do come in and look for hotels and motels and lodging, they'll be able to see your rack card along with the rest of the members of the TBID. That concludes my report, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question.
Jim.
What hours of the day per season is your most activity? So, for example, if you take your first quarter, January, February, March, maybe most of your guests come in, at 11 o'clock till 2 or something like that. I would like that... If you have that information.
Yeah, I can tell you historically, I've been there many, many years, and you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Usually the majority of the rush is from probably just before noon to mid-afternoon till 2:30, 3 o'clock. Now, in the summer hours, when there's more tourists in town, that backs up on both sides. Sometimes I'll get to work at 9 o'clock, and there'll be people mulling around looking to come in. Not too often, but usually it backs up to maybe 10 o'clock, and then we see visitors until maybe 3:30 or 4:30.
Because of your experience, don't you think it might behoove us to look at the hours that we're open to serve people, maybe extending them during the summer months, including now, because I know that a lot of people come to our hotel at all hours looking for other hotels, and maybe reducing them a bit in the winter time.
But I don't know. It's for your board to decide. But if you're asking me, I think the hours are very correctly set right now.
Joan, any questions for the Visitor Center?
No, I think we should go through a full year with the Visitor Center at that location before we even look at hours. I mean, we haven't been through an October, November, December there yet. It hasn't even been open a year. So I would wait and gather information and be able to fall back on the history of that information. But I see where Jane is going. If there's no traffic, then what are we doing? And I understand that there has to be a balance.
As soon as daylight savings time hits, I think you'll see traffic fall off in the 4:30 to 5 when it starts to get dark.
Uh-huh.
Yes, it will fall off, no question. But there are always a few, like someone last minute. That's when you benefit the most, I think, is later in the afternoon when we do get people that come in. The thing they're asking then is not where to go kayaking, but where the hotel. So you guys benefit more, I think, by staying open and later.
And, Ed, I appreciate you coming out each time for the report. I know you sit through a lot of other stuff before you come up, and I appreciate it. And it's a great report. Can I ask, would you be so inclined, if you don't mind, to add a cumulative total for calls and visitors at the bottom of your report?
I have that. Through September, as I said, we had 9,007 visitors. That's a cumulative report, and I can give you the monthly figures, and they're increasing every month. They go up every month. They went down a little bit in September. The biggest month was August, when we had 2,083, and that dropped to 1,622 in September. The phone calls are usually running in the... we started out with 108 the first month. Last month was 240. The numbers are running close to 200 calls a month on the phone.
Right. And can I ask you, do you ever track emails? Like how many people email you asking you, hey, if I come to Morro Bay, what is there to do? Or can you tell me about local whatever?
Yes, I can.
Hotels and wineries. Do you ever track those?
We get one or two a month at the
most. One or two a month at most. Okay, so not even worth it to track. That's why I
asked. Yeah, we don't get a whole lot of those. Most of them either phone or they'll get online and get the information.
Terrific. Thank you. Good report.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Karen?
Yeah, and this isn't actually for Ed. I think this is probably going to be more for Karen. When we opened the visitor center, we had set up a contract with InfoBoard, and we haven't heard anything since. I know there was some problems getting it up and running. I'm wondering whether we can get some kind of status report on where we stand with InfoBoard at this point, a nine-month maybe look back, whether InfoBoard can come in and give us some statistical information on the touchscreen that they set up. Hopefully they can track that. So we can, you know, we're going to have a new contract, I would think, set up coming up. Could be part of the reason why we don't get a lot of verbal requests in the visitor center if people are using the info board information for lodging, using the info board information boards outside. So maybe we could get a status update on that.
I think that's a good suggestion, Karen, and we'll put that in our next report for next month.
Anything else, Karen? Nick? John?
Just a couple of things. Ed, the first project I worked on was fulfillment, the cost of fulfillment at the visitor center. Do we still do fulfillment at the visitor center? And if so, how much do we do?
I'm sorry, I thought you were talking to Karen.
Fulfillment,
I did hear the question that you're asking about fulfillment and how much we do. Yes, we do fulfillment. Normally it's a phone call. Someone won't have a computer. They want a specific brochure, but much, much less than we've ever done in the past years. I can remember some days sitting down at the old visitor center and spending a whole day licking envelopes and sticking in brochures. We just don't do that anymore. The website is taking care of most of that. Once in a while, someone will call and say, I don't have a computer, or I want something in printing or in a print brochure, or a specific brochure on a topic like lodging or dining or recreational campsites. And yes, we fulfill them at the visitor center, but it's very, very small amount.
I guess I would, if that's actually the case, I would call that a success.
We've
stopped chopping down trees.
We have. We certainly, the website and the internet has taken care of much of that for us.
Excellent.
There's still a very few. I can remember a few years ago when we would ask the people if they had a computer because we didn't want to send out a brochure if we didn't have to. They would say, oh, no, I don't have a computer. I don't have to use one. Or now, very rarely does that happen. They all say, oh, it's on the website. I can get the brochure. And you can print out the page you want, a map. And we tell them what is here. We show them what to enjoy so they know where to go. They maybe have a good meal. They go kayaking, and they unfortunately might stay in Cambria that night. But they might come back the next time. So that's what most of the people we serve at the visitor center.
Okay.
That's the way it is.
And just one last, I guess, more comment or question kind of thing. The e-blast thing, and I hate that term, but I realize we use, you know, it's once a month to go out with specials, and you don't want to hound the beneficiary of those e-blasts too frequently with too much stuff, but it strikes me when Ed said he gets a lot of people coming in that are going other places because the national parks are closed, that there's an opportunity to jump on business there, and is the e-blast a way to do it, you know, to go. Now that we know people are looking for different locations because they can't go to Yosemite, can we come up with something that says we've got six state parks within a 15-minute drive, come to Morro Bay, and if you stay here, you know, for every night you stay, a hotelier will donate $5 to the Yosemite Conservancy or something like that, to get people to, you know, use that and the information that Ed's got, use e-blasting information Ed's got to try and drive business among those the group of people. I don't know. Is the e-blast, is that something that can be used for that purpose?
It's a good suggestion. We at one time we did ask visitors to sign a guest log, and some would sign, some wouldn't. You couldn't read half of it. And part of one of the columns was for email, and when the guests saw that, they said they wouldn't fill it out. Oh, I'm just going to get bombarded with blasts. So at the present moment, we do not have a guest log. We don't ask anyone to sign anything. Now, we could put out a log again and ask people if they wanted to volunteer to put their name and address or their email address, but they know they're signing up for email. And that's one of the – it would work for us. We could do it. But whether it would be successful or not, I don't know. We did try it at the chamber for a few years. We had this log. It was a little book we had. People came in. They said where they were from, their name, and they gave comments about the town, what they found, and then we asked them for their email. Some signed it, some didn't. Most and many foreigners don't, don't want to put down anything.
You got a lot. I'm pulling back the cobwebs. Mm-hmm. I remember that down at the visitor center, when we had the Ultimate Getaway a couple of years ago, you used to do the Ultimate Getaway sign-ups
right
there, and you used to add, and correct me on the numbers, but somewhere between probably 30 and 80, maybe, email addresses a month or to the database through
that?
Yes, that was
different because we had a separate, that
right
was a pad, and that was an entry blank. That wasn't a log. That was an entry blank, and they were doing it for a specific purpose. They were going to win a weekend getaway. We got their name, we got their email, and their phone number if possible, and they dropped it into a separate box. That might work. We had a contest there. But the log, the actual guest book, like you have a guest register in your hotels, that just didn't seem to work well.
Any further questions for Ed before he steps away from the podium? Thank you, Ed, so much. Thank you for all your work
welcome
you do down there.
You
thank
guys
you
are doing a great job, too, Eileen. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to move on to website status report. Rick Turton and John Sorgenfrey.
I'm not Rick Turton. He'll be up here shortly. I just thought this would be a good opportunity to – I'll tell you a couple of things that came up that maybe I could help answer. I think with the I think, Karen, you pretty much figured out the email situation. I think the good news is that it did go out to the Saver recipients, did go out to the Valley, but it didn't go out to that master list. So we'll work with Peter on helping him facilitate that, because I guess the good news is, too, that it is created. It's ready to go. I think we can just push the button and get it sent out. I just wanted to comment. A couple of things came up on Carl's report, and I know that I'd already addressed this, but as Karen mentioned, too, a lot of things that that we are underway, especially with the website. I know Carl talked, most of his analysis mirrored what we had already had discovered, so we're in the midst of putting some of the SEO content back in, looking at the referrals to the hotels, things, again, that we talked about prior to that. So that Rick will cover some of that today, but also Rick's going to talk about how we look at conversion. I know that John had mentioned that, and that came up in Carl's report too. So there are some ways to go back and look at ROI, and was asked Rick to address that today for you as well. Also, in the regards to creative, we've really kind of held off till we got Carl's report in, and also till a full budget was approved, which, as you know, you did that last month. So the board wanted to explore with the visitor center, they could set up that contest, that because everything would be in place. The landing page would be in place. The contest would be in place. If we supplied them with those forms, they could actually probably gather some pretty good names at the visitor center to get them to sign up for a contest. So with that, I'm going to bring Rick up, and if you guys have any other questions, be happy to answer. Thanks.
So I've got copies of the web stats, and I'm going to hand out this new report that I just kind of last minute, kind of like John did last minute. I was up this morning doing this, but you guys. So, like John said, this was inspired by Carl Roboto's report. And I thought it would be worthwhile, before we gave the stats, is to talk about conversions and ROI and how we could do what we can do here with what we have available in front of us. So I'll wait until Peter passes it all out. And Okay, so you all got the report, and basically, how dependent is Morro Bay on tourism? Okay, flip the page of what you've got, and you're going to see a big spreadsheet, and that's why I put it back there on the back to a little drama. Okay, what this is if you go to, yes, we already passed out the ones behind us, so... If you look at TOT as a percentage of the general fund and rank them in order, and you can see where Morro Bay comes in. Now, there's over 400 cities in the state of California that collect TOT, about 415 to 430. They fluctuate, some add and some drop off. And you can see I put them in descending order of contribution to general fund. Morro Bay is in the top 25 generally, historically. That's how dependent upon tourism Morro Bay is. So that's why we take it all very seriously. But it's really good to remember back that that's such a point. And you can see Pismo Beach is way out on the tip of the spear. But it's interesting with what John Meyer's comments were about Pismo Beach and Morro Bay. Well, you know, if you want to start looking at a more spread out economy, like, you know, that's got better sales tax, property tax or something, you notice Paso is not even in here. San Luis Obispo is not in here. They're way down the list, trust me. I think Atascadero, because we're just trying to get tourism up in Atascadero. Atascadero is like 375 or something, 350. So I just printed out this list just to show you how, like, what the competition is in, you know, in tourism dependence. You can see the little town of Avalon, an island, is way out there. Mammoth Lakes used to be in front of Pismo Beach, but then, of course, I don't know if it was their lawsuit or anything else. But, you know, but you guys have always been in that 25 spot. So I thought that was really important. You got a question, John?
What's the source of this?
CaliforniaCityFinance.com or .org. And it takes you a while to go in there and grab it. You can do it per capita, too, sales tax per capita. If there's anything you like, I usually track this for the business community of Pismo Beach. It would be not a big problem. If there's something you want me to do, I would just volunteer to bring it in for you.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's go back to the first page. So to understand what we have going here, I just looked at, and I was doing this for other clients, and basically, these are a list of the DMOs, you know, going north and south, and also concentrating on San Luis Obispo, is what are they using on their websites? And where you see website referral column, that means that they're going to be able to go onto the website, find the Embarcadero Inn listing, click on the Embarcadero Inn website, and end up on their website. That is a website referral. Jackrabbit is obviously, we know what Jackrabbit is. OTA, online travel agency, is like booking.com or something like that. So you can see how basically, you know, out of the 12, six are using Jackrabbit, only two are using OTAs. Some of them don't do anything. Interesting enough, Oxnard only uses an OTA and doesn't have any website or anything else. So it's kind of interesting. So what we've got here is we've got the two-pronged system of we've got website referrals and Jackrabbit referrals. Okay. Now, in the data that we passed out, we have about 50,000 referrals so far this year. Okay. So they're broken out like about 34% Jackrabbit and about 66% website referrals. Okay. Each one of those would have a different conversion rate because, you know, I mean, I'll pick on Karen's Embarcadero Inn again. So if I came to the front of Embarcadero Inn website, I still got to enter in the dates. I got to do something. I'm going to go into her booking engine, okay? That has a certain what we call in the industry a look-to-book rate, own matrix, okay? So if you have 50,000 referrals right now and you have a look-to-book of 2%, you've got about 1,000 reservations that are going to be created out of that. The average length of stay, I'm using 2 nights. You can build your own matrix to use whatever you want. 2 nights, you're looking at 2,000 room nights. Now, here's where the fun comes in, ADR. Applying an ADR system-wide, you know, what do we, you know, we can go $100, we can go $75, we can go $50, whatever you want. I just picked $75, okay? So I came out with $75 ADR, average length of stay, 2 room nights. And the 2,000 room nights were booked, I came up with basically $150,000. Okay, now,
here's the joker in the deck. In our industry, we always sit there and say, you, for every $1 you make on an online booking system, you'll make $4 to $7 in a telephone call. So we're exposing the telephone call to everybody that's landing on the pages or that are going on to your website. So I added a factor in of 4, and that added in another $600,000. So we came up to $750,000 from 50,000 reservations, just as a number, just to show you. Now, obviously, if all those reservations wanted to be booked on 4th of July, you don't have the capacity. So it's just a systematic look at it. Now, as John was saying, you got $2.229 million in TOT, which I transfer into $22 million in lodging sales. I feel that a DMO website should be able to create 3 to 5% of the lodging sales. Okay, so in other words, we look at 22 million, take 3 to 5%, and are we in the ballpark? We are in the ballpark. And to me, that's a measurement that we need to look at going forward. How do we want to increase that? Because to me, you know, unique visitors, new visitors, you know, all that, is still, if this is funded by BID funding mechanism, and I know part of it isn't, but you know, let's say the major portion is, that's where the ROI has to come in. If I sit there and say, and I'll just round the numbers off, if I sit there and says, okay, guys, we think that your website currently, with all the marketing, everything comes down the funnel to the website, out the bottom of the funnel comes Embarcadero Inn or Beach Bungalow or whoever, okay? And we say, you're spending X amount of dollars, and this is the possible ROI, and this is your conversion rate of $1 million. You know what you're spending is out the $1 million. Remember, it's possibilities, but that's the best we can do, unless you went strictly to an OTA that was doing all of the reservations right there, that was eliminating totally Karen's booking engine or Joan's booking engine. You know, if we just did everything like the Oxnard model, we'd be able to really say this created $500,000 reservations. You spent $100,000 in marketing it. Your ROI is 5 to 1. So anyway, hopefully that didn't bore you too much. I think it's really important to understand that going in, especially with what Carl's saying, conversions, ROI. That's the best we have, the best system we have right now for what we're doing. You know, I mean, we couldn't really say, Nick, we're sending you 10,000 people, and are they making reservations? Are they eating? You know, that kind of a thing. That's really a much more difficult thing. But the system is in place for the lodging entities. You know, even though Nick's getting a lot of plays on the dining guides going up, but anyway, so that's my. I'm hopefully, did that give any questions or anything you might agree or don't agree? You guys individually should be making your own matrix, following that same line along. You might have a different length of stay. It might be 2.2 nights. It might be $73.50 is ADR. You know, your look to book ratio could be 4%. You know, and I think these numbers are fairly conservative because we don't factor in the conversion rate of a jackrabbit where they've already got the rate, they've already got their dates in. I got to believe that that's pretty up there, you know. So any questions on that before I wander into web stats?
Does anybody have any questions for Rick before he wanders into stats?
I had a question, actually. I thank you for that. And, you know, it's interesting to me on this list of the DMOs, the only one that has an OTA system is Oxnard. On the front page, the only one that only has an OTA system only, yeah. Let me rephrase it,
yeah.
Is Oxnard, and then they're not at all on the list. I couldn't find Oxnard at all. So it's curious to me what their dependency is.
Well, they've got a better economic model. They've got better property taxes. They've got better sales tax. In other words,
right.
They've got
but what I'm saying is
shopping centers
and stuff
like that.
I would be curious to find out what their city's dependency on tourism is. You know, is it 10%? You know what I'm saying?
I can expand this list. This list, remember, is 400 cities long.
No. It's good. Okay. You could just call me on it. I'm just curious about that because they're the only one on this list that only has an OTA system.
Right.
Thanks.
Interesting. Any other questions at all?
No, I have a comment, Jane.
But I can talk you through them. One of the things that we have to remember here is
what I was doing was basically getting the SEO back in place, getting your search back up, your search numbers. One of my victories was in July, you were capturing about 30%. I think it was 30%. Let me look really quick here at my numbers. In event searches, Morro Bay event searches, you were capturing 32%. In September, I worked on that a little bit over the time that I had, and you captured 65% of the searches for Morro Bay events, because your event page is one of your most highly sought after or viewed pages right now. One of the things to not get too excited about the numbers for September is we had no additional marketing out there because you guys hadn't really pushed the, you know, public, you know, approved the budget for the marketing. So the website was kind of almost naked out there at this point in time. Residual marketing that was carrying forward, but there was no new banner ad programs put out there. There's no, you know, nothing going on really. So we're seeing that now that this is kicking in, and John is, you know, and he can tell you what he's doing. There's some other things that are going on with the marketing. So now that we're, now the website should be benefit from the additional marketing that you approved, because it's a little too soon because you guys just approved it, plus kind of the Carl Roboto report too type of thing with the, could have some influence on where you go. But anyway, so one of the things is your event page is still your big page. It's had more views in September this year, year over year. It, not a lot, but it was still a pretty good increase. One of the things I'll keep reporting on, because it's it really has, unfortunately, an adverse effect, is you're down for the first 9 months of 2013 compared to 2012. You're down 3,000 referrals from the city website. Out of that 3,000 referrals, 2,400 of them happened in the last 3 months. So that, you know, that becomes a big, huge drag, you know, kind of an anchor weighing us down from going up in the other direction where we want to go. And Nick, I did add onto the mobile device page dining views. So hopefully you do see that. So, you know, dining is it plays a pretty major role when you look at the top pages from the regular website. We've had 15,000, almost 16,000 page views on the dining guide. So hopefully the people that are in the dining sections are seeing some benefit from that too, because it's our fifth most viewed page. And I think that's really good, because I know in Pismo it doesn't rate that high. But any questions on the web stats or anything you want to talk about on the website or anything? Some of the things we've done on the website, we got the annual events in the sidebar. We're working on, and Peter could give you more update on that, we're working on adding events and for 2014 into the event section. You've got to remember, event page, we got the sidebar, and then we got this big paragraph up here, and I'm thinking of trimming that paragraph down so the events that are really down there where everybody wants to go kind of rises up a little bit. The only thing I'm looking at in that events section is good SEO content, and we kind of be repetitive about the events. It says Harbor Festival, and then Harbor Festival is over an annual event, and Harbor Festival until it expired was down below Oyster Festival, stuff like that. So I think we can pare that back, because that's a huge attraction right now. And one of the things that's good always to remember is on the hotel page, where it's all jumbled up and randomized and you got your images, your phone number is being exposed there. So if they want to sit there and say, well, hey, I went to the Embarcadero Inn, what was that phone number? They don't have to go any further than that. They can get that phone number there, call you guys up and say, hey, I stayed there last week. I want to come back again or something like that. So questions?
I'm going to go first this time. I have a couple questions. Okay. The Google map that Joan was talking about earlier.
That's curious, yeah. And I think it's a really good point, you know. And I would do my due diligence on it, but now I made some notes on it, and, you know, we were talking in the back, all of us were saying back here, that's a really good point. You know, it's bad if you're not, you know, highlighted as a place to say, you know. So, you know, I mean, but, you know, one of the things is you guys brought this up first, and I was really attentively listening to John's report. I wish I heard from the very beginning of it. But in Pismo, we have Highway 101. That has huge amount of traffic. I mean, a lot more than Highway 1 will ever have. And we know that our highway hotels, the Oxford Suites, the Hiltons, those things, get people that
this day off. I have a retail store. Well, actually, my wife has a retail store that she cons me into working on the weekends on. And I talk to the Germans, the Hollanders, the Dutch, I mean, you know, that come in. And what are they doing? They've flown into San Francisco. They've gone out maybe to Las Vegas, Grand Canyon, something like that. They cook back into 101, and then they're driving to San Francisco where they're going to fly.
About being able for us to do our own survey on the website to get a conversion rate for our own independent website.
You mean put a survey question like SurveyMonkey out there, three questions, and have them fill it out and do something? You know,
we've
run it
doable.
Before. I've usually done that at the Chamber of Commerce level and not really a DMO level, but it sure can be done.
Okay. Jane, anything for Rick? Joan?
I'm wondering if you were able to check out, and this might be a John Sorgenfrey question. I always try. There's three guys named John in the room here, so it's like this might be a John Sorgenfrey question, but what is the status of checking in on that blog on TripAdvisor or any of those travel blogs existing out there on the OTAs? Is that done linking through you?
Okay.
How is that?
Well, let's split off. You kind of made two requests over the time, the TripAdvisor blog and us being able to blog out of Morro Bay and then have it broadcast out to the social media. I'm in the process right now. That second half, not the TripAdvisor, and John can speak to that if he wants to, is the second half. I'm testing that on my own WordPress site, how it works before we bring it in and activate it. And one of the things that slowed us down is Casey was gone on a convention for our conference for the week, so up the San Francisco area, the Bay Area. But the TripAdvisor thing, it didn't land on my plate. And I think John has been talking about, or Casey has been talking about TripAdvisors, because I know we just did something for Avila Beach on that, too.
Well, she did look into it, and actually she is up in San Francisco. I sent her up to a social media seminar for education, so she's up there hopefully learning a lot of good things, and she'll give you guys a report. That blog is basically a blog that everybody would have to go in and blog on it. It's not a blog that we would control. You do have, through your TripAdvisor tourism module, where you have your own page on TripAdvisor, that is a place where we could do blogging. But I think the thing that she was looking at was just the general blog on TripAdvisor, where people just go on and they make comments. It'd be like Yelp, for instance. I mean, you can't just control that unless you want to go on and do your own routine blogging. So she did look into that, but she can give you more of a report when she gets back for the next time. But she did look at it. But there also, the module that you do have on TripAdvisor, which we're pollinating, is very important, because you're getting some tremendous referrals from that.
John?
Not right this second. But thank you for coming back with that information.
Karen?
You talked about working on SEO and content update and review on the events page starting. Is that how you're kind of going back through the website in general, is taking it page by page? And did you kind of start with a home, moved on to events?
Yeah,
where does lodging come from?
Very, very good. As I've already gone into lodging. That was my first one. And now what I'm doing is I'm looking down the list of most popular pages and seeing what I can do. We've already started getting some search results from Morro Bay Lodging. Actually, on my list of webmaster tools, Morro Bay Hotels has showed up on the list for the first time, and we were able to capture 1% of all of the impressions, where in August and July it wasn't even visible for me. So, you know, me and SEO, it's like a dance. We do, you know, all the time we're dancing, and I'm trying different things. I'll try Morro Bay Lodging to see, but I can't mess up Morro Bay Hotels or Morro Bay Motels or Motels in Morro Bay or Hotels in Morro Bay. I got to work and make sure that what I do over here doesn't do over here. And I, so the event events was just a real important thing because I, you know, and hopefully we use the Harbor Festival as a really good tryout is by embedding the booking engine in their website. And, you know, and that's one thing is unfortunately there's no way to track that. And I'm going to reach out to Jackrabbit and say, well, we want to do this. We want to have one on the 4th of July site or Oyster Festival site or anybody you fund. How can we track that separately instead of just embedding a widget into it? So I've already looked at all that, and I still keep looking at it, but as I slowly expand out, you know, like the events section, and then I'll do the dining section and the things to do and about and stuff and break the pages out that way. And then I've got to sit there and find some time to start looking at the mobile site, too, because the mobile site is sending referrals in, as you can see from the report. But good question. Yeah, I'd look lodging first, obviously. I'd know where it is.
One of the things that we were actively doing too, and if you go and do a search, we're now in the first position again from where the city is on Google. So if you type in Morro Bay or Morro Bay CA, we become the top website. So that was part of the SEO work too.
John brings up a really good point, and you know it comes back to John Meyer's comments about TOT. So much because there's that much less people. So in other words, where you've almost dropped down by a third. Interesting enough, I was able to capture, you guys were able to capture 11% of those numbers. So that creeped up a little bit, and that's a good thing. But that's how it steps off the plate. And, you know, that's where you really, it's really difficult, and I know this personally from a long time with my own business and everything else, it's really difficult to affect anything that happens in the low season. It's the shoulder season. That's where you got your good weather, people are still traveling, and that's where we got to go for. And so it's a really good thing, John, is to track those 3 months in and 3 months out, because you guys are going to be full no matter almost what you do unless you really shoot yourself in the foot for summertime. You know, something big happens here, you know. But those are the things that we looked at in Pismo and other places is those 3 months in and 3 months out is to track how much of that you can drag into there. Because as you said, you've got 920 rooms times 90 days is a whole bunch of inventory. And there, if you can affect that by 1% or 2% occupancy rate, you're going to be really, everybody's going to be really happy. So those are some goals that I have set myself and, you know, whatever you guys try to set too of what reasonable goals you want. Double, Carl scared me when he said he wanted to double the amount of unique visitors over a year. You know, I would challenge Carl then and say, okay, Carl, do you really know what unique visitors are, you know, over a year's period of time? Just really quick is that John Meyer comes on the site in January and visits and books a room, and then John Meyer comes on in March and books a room. Well, he's booked a bunch of rooms, but if you look at the unique visitors for the whole year, he's only one unique visitor. So I'd rather look at new visits and keep that new visits coming up. But anyway, any more questions? I guess.
Really quick on referring URLs.
Yep.
Very quickly. When you zip over to referring URLs, I see that Facebook right now in September referred 73 people. With our push in social media that we're going to be doing, the team approach and the push that we're going to be doing in social media, can you tell me what the goal might be, what a tangible goal might be on a shoulder month like September? And I'm looking at our referring URLs. Our referring URLs, their referral ratio, I'm surprised that it's down lower than a March. It's down somewhere in between a March and a February type ratio for September, when to me it should be up in the May's area. So I'm concerned about how the fall is going to look.
Which are you just talking Facebook in?
No, I'm looking at
just overall
page.
Referrals. Yeah.
The overall referrals.
Yeah.
And so overall referrals, you see that they're down somewhere in between like a March and February number for the September, and that makes me concerned about how the fall is going to look. But I'm wondering what the goal is going to be. What goal is that number going to be? Because that number is, it's funny that in January we had 119 Facebook referrals. I mean, it's just all over the place
right.
With Facebook. And how do you see YouTube and and the others playing into that? Do you see them coming up on this and pushing someone else out?
Excellent question, because what I need to do with this, I just noticed that, is there's a m.facebook also that we need to do, the mobile version of Facebook. So I need to probably go back and add that into the stats, because that sometimes will give you a good Facebook feel, because some of it's coming in via mobile and some people's coming in from the regular network site. So I made a note on that. But you've really done a good point, is let's look at July with 173 and September 73. Let's just look at that range right there. Is, you know, what is being posted on Facebook? Is it just not going linking back to morrowbay.org? I always try to incorporate any post that goes onto social media to come back. And that might or might not have been happening. And that's something that I talk about to these guys, to sit there and make sure it says, look, you post something, we're going to have content here. One of the things that we did do, and I forgot to mention this in my report, is I built a landing page for both the Harbor Festival and the Hoyster Festival, you know, basically in part of Morro Bay, just to trap searches and then feed that off to the Harbor Festival website. And so one of the things that we need to do is, if we're going to do a Facebook post for the Lighted Boat Parade, we should have Lighted Boat Parade content on our website that we link from Facebook or YouTube back into here. Then we can track it here. But if it doesn't and it says, well, I'll pick on Peter. Peter's getting married today, you know, is it on the Facebook post. Well, that's not going to come back to morrowbay.org. It might be a worthy post on Facebook, but we got to make sure that the content comes there. So I'm thinking this doesn't mean that we've only done 73 posts on Facebook. It means that they did 73 posts that had a link back to morrowbay.org that somebody clicked on. So it's the quality and quantity of what we're trying to do, but make sure that it comes back. And so one of the things we've been doing is slowly, as time permits, building landing pages. So then we'll have this landing page, like the Harbor Festival landing page will be there forever now. All we got to do is update it for 2004.
The fans were increased for Facebook, and then the Google AdWords report that Rick would have too. So that's the nice thing about those online ads. You know, when you run a print ad, it's always sort of nebulous. You know, you hope you got success. It's really hard to track. We'll come back with a report of exactly, you know, how many click-throughs, how many people, how many new fans. And then as a part of that also would be the referrals. And those all should show up as a major referral source, too, once those campaigns start. So we should start seeing YouTube as a referral source, more Facebook. So it should increase substantially.
That was a good question, Jonas. It drives me nuts sometimes when the clients fluctuate like that in Facebook referrals. I just think that maybe, you know, we need to revisit posting the links back to content, making sure content was there so we can link to it. But I'd like to see that really flatline a little bit more, maybe seasonality-wise, more like, you know, the visitorship and stuff like that. But I think for the fall season and definitely the spring season, we need to have better numbers there. Any more questions on stats?
Anybody else have anything else for Rick? Thank you, Rick.
No problem.
Awesome job. Okay, where are we at? Let me pull my agenda. Here we go. Okay, websites. So we are moving on to nomination and approval to fill the vacant board positions. If you recall at the last meeting, we have a treasurer position that is open. Jane had some interest in the treasurer position, but she is currently secretary. John Myers took the treasurer for the month, so we need to discuss treasurer of the month. Yeah, he front and center at the bureau. So we're here now to decide kind of how to fill that treasurer position. Obviously, we do not have Alex here. So that is what is up for discussion, and that's our next item.
Did anybody speak with Alex? Do we know if he has any desire for any of these positions?
I have spoken to Alex, and he has a lot going on right now, and he's very busy right now. He really did not want to step up and take a position, as he may not be able to make it to the next month's meeting as well. So... John Myers has got his hand up. I'm going to let him speak.
If you would so want, I would say that I would volunteer to remain treasurer until the elections in March, and when we go through everything, Part of the reason being that, and the budget committee has already seen some of the stuff that's going on regarding, you know, new chart of accounts and things like that. So kind of involved in some stuff and staying with it for the time being might be a good idea. So if the board wanted to support that, I would stay on until, I guess, elections are in March.
I would agree with that. I think that that's a great idea. I know, I sit on the budget subcommittee, so I know the kind of work that John is doing, and it's good and valuable work. And I think also that the report that we saw today with TOT and all that, you know, shows that he's really in tune with the figures in terms of what's going on. And we are, you know, in the process of, you know, looking at a few structural things that the board has asked us to do, and I think it would be good to have him continue to take the lead on that at least through March and see where this whole thing goes then.
Jane? I'm supportive of it as well. Karen?
I think that's a great idea. The only thing I want to be sure to remind the board of is that John is the vice president. And in the past or the first elections that we have, we decided we didn't want someone to hold two positions in the executive council. So, but I think John would be a great treasurer.
Nick?
What was the, in coming up in March of next year, what is that election? Is that
so every March, every year, that was when we look at our full board.
Oh, okay.
Makeup, yes.
Chair, vice chair.
Secretary, treasurer, basically the whole entire board goes up for re-election at that point. So I'd love to hear a motion of John's suggestion. How do we address, I thought last time we looked in our bylaws and we all had different bylaws about the double positions. I
don't
agree
think that's
with you,
in the
though.
Bylaws.
It wasn't in
I
the
think
bylaws.
It was a opinion,
a recommendation,
of the board, as opposed to actually being in the bylaws.
Right.
Actually, you know, I was looking at the bylaws, and in the first draft, it said that we can hold more than one office, and then all of a sudden in the final draft there was nothing, and I was looking throughout the minutes I had to see if there was any discussion about that, and there wasn't any. So it's just interesting to me why that dropped off.
There was discussion. It certainly is common in a small corporation.
And over to March also, and that we accept John Myers as interim to handle both positions for treasurer and vice president.
Peter, can you repeat that? Do you mind? Or Jane? I'm sorry.
Member Beeman motioned to move the vacant position to March, accepting Member Myers as interim for both treasurer and vice president.
Anybody going to second? I can second. I'll second. I forget I can second. I'll second. Discussion.
There we go.
And I know Joan is looking through bylaws.
Research.
Now, do we, in the meantime, though, are we just looking for a VP? Is that where we're...
No. John would stay on as VP.
Okay.
And he would also stay
be
on
treasurer.
As interim treasurer.
Okay.
And then in March, we would address the whole thing.
But is that preferable, or would it be better to have a VP?
It would be preferable, probably, to have a VP.
Is there anyone willing to be VP?
I would be VP if somebody wanted to be secretary.
But then that just...
Well, that's my point. My point is
that... And
that
was why we said all vacancies, because we thought there could be some movement.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Jane in the past... And this was why we moved this to this month, was Jane had said to me, I will be treasurer, therefore can't be secretary.
Well, what are the duties of VP?
I think John Myers has been enjoying being VP.
You get preferred parking.
No, more like duty. What are the duties, I guess?
Counsel to president. Quite a bit, and with my workload, working a lot.
You get a lot of yelled at a lot, and actually, if you look in the bylaws,
we took
it's
out
basically
we
back up
it.
To the chairman, yes. To the president. it's the best spot to have because there's no responsibilities.
Well, she can't make a meeting.
Oh, and we do our weekly meetings. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Yeah, we meet once a week. About an hour, hour and a half.
The other thing is, what about, does a non-hotelier, are they available for that, a VP?
Yeah, John's,
yeah, John's
a non-hotelier.
John is. John, did you buy a hotel recently?
Bought the
I know of
chain.
One for sale.
Mr. Hilton over there.
Okay, so it looks like we're in discussion. She's looking up bylaws.
So it sounds like we're talking about looking, opening positions for secretary, VP, and treasurer.
Well, I'd be willing to be VP until we look at this again in March.
Okay.
That's fine. Okay, I'll amend my motion.
So
my motion is that we accept John as treasurer, Nick as vice president, and that's it.
That's it.
Okay.
Until March.
Well,
yes.
We don't need until March because our next elections are in
is
March.
In March. Right. John, how do you feel about...
I think that's terrific because there is a lot of... There's a large workload and having
on
somebody
treasure.
Else here to carry
Absolutely.
Some of it would be a good idea.
Now, I have one question. I have a question then. John and I have been doing a lot of work on our weekly meetings. Can John still join in? Yeah, that'd only be three. So John and Nick and I could meet with the weekly meetings if need be in a transition for the next month or two just to get Nick up to speed on what, because a lot of things get addressed on our weekly meetings.
And we could have them at Lolo's.
So there you go.
I'm just wondering, and
I'm not really sure. It isn't a quorum, obviously, but it is a subcommittee size at that point with three people meeting with the ED. And we also, remember, have the position of a budget subcommittee that's going to be looked at. So keep that in mind also, which has to be, you know, a three-person.
And I would assume Nick is going to stay on the budget subcommittee.
He's not on the budget subcommittee.
Yes, he is.
He
was for the month.
Okay.
Okay, so that needs to get addressed then, too.
But then you're in those meetings, remember?
I'm not in the budget subcommittee meetings.
No.
I'm in the weekly.
Meetings.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
I'm sorry, where are we?
So we have a motion on the table that Nick would be VP, John would be treasurer, Jane would stay as secretary, and I would stay as president.
And we have a second, right?
Yeah,
we'll
second. Think, I will second that.
For
I
discussion?
Because that
that's where we need
was,
to be.
Seconded.
Well, any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, motion carries 6-0. Welcome, new VP. Welcome, new treasurer.
Yeah.
Okay, and we move on. The next item is discussion of up-to-date financials, and I'll give you a background. If you recall, last meeting, Karen handed out the financials of the organization and basically just kind of handed it to us and said if anybody had any questions or if there was any clarification, we would bring it up at the next meeting. So that's why this is on here. It wasn't that there was anything to be addressed other than the fact of since we were handed the items and hadn't had a chance to review them, they were here for discussion at this meeting.
I wasn't at that last meeting. Could I get a copy of those? When you have a chance, Karen.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to get them from the other Karen. Karen.
So my question to everybody would be, does anybody have any questions? As I think we heard Myers allude a little bit to, we're working on budget subcommittees, working on some chart of accounts, and kind of clearing up a little bit the financial statements.
A comment on that since we can talk about it since
we're all
here.
Together. Yeah.
The way that George is presenting the statements. I don't know the best how to say it. He's trying to group expenses in terms of visitor center, tourism bureau, regional, and destination marketing, and they're not they're not getting presented in the way that we present our budgets. So what we need to do is give George the guidance to be able to take those expenses and put them in the proper categories, so what QuickBooks generates at the end of his monthly process is a statement that resembles the format that our budget is in. At the budget committee, we talked a little bit about reformatting our budget format a little bit too, in that I think it would be better if we had a standalone visitor center, a standalone regional marketing statement, and then a standalone tourism bureau, because those are the three forms of distinct revenue that we receive as an organization. And then it would all have to consolidate at the end into a combined statement, because it is all belonging to one company. So what we've worked on at the budget committee level, and I'll be seeing George this afternoon, I gave him a copy of it yesterday, I emailed it over to him, is a copy of a new chart of accounts which I put together in the format I just described: visitor center, regional marketing, and tourism bureau. And I think once George sees it, he'll understand the format that we're looking for. And then it's going to be a matter of going back and looking at our actual expenses and putting the actual expenses into the right buckets. So when I see George this afternoon, he's giving me all the expense receipts for this fiscal year for the 3 months. And I'll go ahead and sort those into the proper buckets and code them, and then make sure that George knows in the future when these kinds of expenses come in, and Karen, will know what buckets to properly put things in. So then I think what we'll hopefully be able to generate, maybe starting with the October statements, is we'll be able to create a financial statement that will look something like our budget looks, and then we'll be able to do actual financial comparison to budget. On a monthly basis, on a year-to-date basis, on an annual basis. The other part, just so everybody set expectations correct, in talking to George, he gets the bank statement online 2 or 3, sometimes 4 days, depending on weekends, after month end. It's prepared as of the last, but there, it's dated as of the last day of the month. He needs, a reasonable amount of time, probably a week, to do complete the reconciliation of the account and then complete his financial statements and generate the financial statements. So frequently, we could have a TBID or we could have a Tourism Bureau meeting as early as the 8th of the month. It could be as late as the 13th of the month. So most of the time, George is not going to have a statement available for us for the prior month. So I think we probably need to set our thinking that for the November meeting, we'll probably be looking at the September statement, which is okay, because that will be consistent with the TBID, with the TOT statements we're getting and everything. So I think if the board accepts that, then I think we're got a plan in action with George. I would be understanding on behalf of the board. It's going to take a fair amount of time to go through a lot of receipts, but I would certainly like to have that delivered to the first 90 days delivered to the board at the next meeting. There may be a few errors in it, but it would be substantially correct. And I think I would like to say that the statement that George has given us, everything's in it. All the revenues are there and all the expenses are there, so the bottom line on the statement is correct, and we would actually, any new statement would be balancing back to the statement that George has created so far.
I've got a question after Karen.
I was just going to say, maybe if you could at least reclassify and get that part done, not do the budget versus actual part of it. Let George pick up that going forward from October. But if you could maybe get the reclassification done, that might be a big help. And then with our December statement, with our December meeting and our October statement, hopefully we'll be able to see the budget versus actual from George.
That is probably achievable, because some of this, we budget salaries annually and so forth, and John's working on the biggest part, or the destination marketing budget, the biggest chunk of money in there. He's working on the budget for that, so we didn't even have those monthly numbers yet. We know the totals, but he's got to fill in that on the monthly, and part of that for the regional. So to actually do the budget comparison to the way we would like it to be is probably going to be year-end before we really have it the way we like it.
And I guess my question would be, John Sorgen Fry, hopefully we can see, or we won't see, but the invoices, the monthly invoices submitted are going to be broken down by not necessarily the marketing per se in terms of what's banner, what's print, what's this and that much, so much as because you're also handling social media and website, mm-hmm. And that is broken out in our budget, that the invoices will be broken out the same way.
Right. We've submitted some already, mostly just for like social media and web work, since we haven't really got, as John said, get into the heavy-duty stuff, which will occur this month, start incurring costs. But yeah, we can modify, you know, do that any way that would be good. We can work off of a, you know, Karen gets the invoices, so I can come up with something similar to what you had in the past where we had that running total. We could supply that, or Karen could do that at her office to report. But they will be noted. I mean, they'll be clear that this is web work, social media, this is media. So we should be able to subtract from those categories as we go along.
Now?
Okay.
Jane. What I would like to see, this is what I would like to see. We have two funding sources, and just like we ask all of our events to make a report on their use of funds, I am sure that our two funding sources, one being our stakeholders, the other one being our city, would like to say, okay, we gave you, if it's $116,000, we want to know where you spent the $116,000. Just like our stakeholders saying, whoop, you got 600 and some thousand, we want to know where that's spent. Now, at the same time, I have a director of tourism who has a percentage of her time that needs to be expensed out to regional and a percentage of her time being expensed out to overnight stays. I would really like to hone in on this stuff because we need to determine, especially if in the future we have three funding sources or one funding source, where those percentages lie so that when we redo our budget, we'll know what we can expense out to that. For instance, the visitor center. Ed basically has told us that serves regional, really, it's 85% regional or more, 90% regional, 10% overnight stays. So if 90% of that is from regional marketing funds and that regional marketing funds is not there, what are we going to do? Take that on? So I would like to see those figures, not December, but the budget committee, I asked for that. I would like to see that at some point. I think that is managing our budget and managing our sources.
I think in the detail of the budgets that we've done, that has been accomplished already. For the funding for the visitor center, as an example, is a separate funding source from the city. So the budget for the visitor center is $114,000 a year and change. We get $100,000 of that from the city as specific money paid to us on a monthly basis. The balance is what we would pick up as the from assessment funds.
Right, I understand that, but what I'm trying to say is, if there was $114,000 and running the visitor center,
it's just a transition. Okay. Any other further discussion about financials?
Just on the budget, I just wanted to get back to the board. There was a motion made last month, and we did get back and increase the billboard from $3,000 to $10,000 with the $5,000 in regional and $5,000 destination. We did, too, increase the shop local from $0 to $10,000 all in regional. That wasn't in the motion. Now, when we look back on the minutes, but that was what, and John had questioned, John, it was in discussion, and John had questioned it during our emails back and forth. We did, increase the website from 6,000 to 27,000 with 9 in regional and 18 in destination, 4, at the purchase of the website of $16,000, all from the regional, and 5, decrease regional and destination media spend by 35 and 19 respectively. Just to let you know from the discussion how
so
we did that.
So do we need to move to make amendments to the budget at this point then, or is the budget subcommittee comfortable with the changes that we've got under motion and still need to go forward with? Will there be more?
I guess I'm
wondering, are we going to be amending the budget every month, or are we good with the budget now?
That, I think, is at the will of the board. What I'm bringing back to you is that we had discussion, we made a motion, we took action on that and adjusted the budget, and that budget it's all the same total number, obviously, we all know that, but we moved it as advised by the board at the last meeting, and that's where we're at with it. So I just wanted to let you all know that it had been moved as advised by the board.
I remember the board tasked the budget subcommittee to readjust.
I think we were talking about where they're coming from,
where the revenue's
coming from, mm-hmm. also, not just where it's moving into, but from. What it's coming out
from.
Of.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what I'd maybe love to see is, could we have the budget subcommittee then submit the new budget as it appears with those changes?
Sure, just provide it to you? Mm-hmm. Sure, we can provide that to you, no problem.
I mean, I would think that's what I'd
absolutely.
Like to see.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, because we approved it through the motion that we did first. So we just dropped it into the categories, took it out of the categories that they asked in the motion, dropped it into the categories that they asked.
Right. So I think it would just be nice to have a budget that is current.
The only one would be in question
because I think one of the mm-hmm. issues that we discussed, and I don't know that that was brought up in the in your little recap, was the PR pulling the funding for lodging and food for promos and FAMs, that type of thing, out of PR and moving it into. And I don't know. I don't know if we requested a separate line item for that, or if we just. But I'm almost positive we requested a cap for that, out of PR. So
looking at the minutes, Member Mendoza made a motion to accept the reimbursement recommendations from the executive director. Member Biagini made an amendment to put a cap on the PR budget for hotelier reimbursement. Member Biagini seconded this motion, and it was carried unanimously 5-0. But it doesn't say the cap.
Well, that was part of the budget subcommittee's.
I think they were supposed to be tasked with, yeah.
Oopsie. That's my comment.
So why don't we tell the budget subcommittee if they can please go back and come up with what their cap should be.
Yeah.
Well, I think the budget subcommittee is not going to do anything until we get health care free for everybody.
Yeah. Until Yosemite's back open.
Okay, so that obviously we did not come up with a cap, but yeah, thank you, Karen, because looking back at that, we talked about the cap, but never, I think it was the budget subcommittee.
Okay, we can bring that back next
And then when
month,
you bring that back, you can bring back the new budget
sure.
with everything realigned.
Okay.
And that'll just be a future agenda item. Okay. Anything further on the financials? And can I task you guys with one more thing? Could you guys then look at that motion, too? Because we could go back and look at the motion. Because it's also got on there the $10,000 shop local. That needs to get resolved. If she did not make that motion, which I believe she says she didn't, we maybe need to address that as well.
What can we just leave it to the budget subcommittee to make that reallocation of the regional budget?
Yeah.
It's
as we see fit,
right,
we'll come back
and
report to
yeah.
you that it's done.
It's okay with me as long as I get a new budget.
Totally. Yeah, because we'll get a new budget anyway.
From the board.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
It just reminded me that never kind of got resolved either.
I think, what happened was it was a consensus during discussion. It's a consensus here now. Everyone's shaking their head, and, a budget's fluid. So it's been dropped in there already, and we'll bring that budget back to you.
Okay. Anything further on those financials? Gosh, I think now we know what works a little better with those funds of leveraging our dollars versus just handing out cash. So that's why this event policy and grant guidelines is before us for discussion and to adopt, hopefully. So seeing that, hopefully everybody's read it
And I guess I'll go to Jane first, because she's the one I tend to pick on first.
I only had one question, and in the past we had asked that we fund to nonprofits. Was that ever, in the past when we've discussed this, we have talked about organizations coming to us for grants that were, and we funded through nonprofits. Did we ever resolve that?
I don't think it's ever been back for discussion.
Oh, okay.
I know there was a lot of discussion around that, but it was never brought back.
Oh, okay.
One reason why I think it was talked about but needs to be addressed.
Any other questions on that? So I have a couple of things in regard to this. I would just caution us to be considerate of the tradition of the event in Morro Bay. And typically events in Morro Bay are put together by the same group, small group of people over and over again, a multitude of events. Folks who work on 4th of July work on or have worked on Harbor Festival. Folks who work on Harbor Festival work on or have worked on the Lighted Boat Parade. Those folks who have worked on the Lighted Boat Parade and 4th of July have worked at or are volunteers working on behalf of the Avocado Margarita Festival. And when we talk about going to businesses for funding and sponsorship of these events, you're talking about 33 hotels, 56 restaurants-ish, Nick? And like 60, 70 retailers. So to go over and over again for 15 majors and 55 minors to those same businesses over and over again for cash, very few of those businesses are going to step up and put $5,000 to an event like even 4th of July, which is a national nations event, or a Harbor Festival, which is a major in an off-season, which used to be an off-season, but because of events like the Harbor Festival and the Oyster Festival, it's now becoming a shoulder season for us. So to me, supplying cash in terms of seed money to keep the event rolling forward throughout the year is a form of both tourism and growth in terms of economic stability for supporting our own businesses within our community. In other words, not taking that $1,000 out of a restaurant and then being able to market that, but use this $1,000 worth of event money to support that event throughout the year is a win-win for our business community too. So I am not for a model that would recuse, that would take cash off the table. I'm going to be honest, especially when 90% of the events are charitable or 501c's. Secondly, when it comes to charitable or 501c, I wouldn't want to lock us into anything that would be only a charitable or a 501c, because if at some point the Tour de California wanted to come here and do a stage and event here, they're for profit. I would want to see if there would be a way to work that out where Morro Bay could gain that exposure in a partnership format. But that would take probably some funding or something like that. And I think we would be talking about something completely different. That would be a major media exposure, kind of like Savor, as opposed to, you know, just an event funding. But if there were an event like California Bike Racers, Inc. that was coming down Highway 1, and they found us somehow on Highway 1 from point A to point B on Google Maps and wanted to stay with us and wanted to stay with us and stage an event here, I wouldn't want the 501c thing to preclude us from being able to somehow contribute to that and make that happen. So those are the comments I have. I like the event policy. I do think that at some point events should stand alone, but then when I look at something like the Harbor Festival, which is a tradition over 32 years, and which has you know, I think we also need to understand the history of events in Morro Bay. In 2008, 9-ish, before...
Something again?
Yeah, go ahead.
Just, thank you, Joan. The reason I brought up the nonprofit was because of a lot of the reasons that Joan said. Okay. But also, I want us to distinguish, we need to maybe set some percentages or look at that or go back to these events to say, you know, who's producing them? Are they nonprofit? Are they not nonprofit? You brought up the Oyster Fest. It gives to a nonprofit, but it is no longer a nonprofit. That's what I understand. July 4th is a nonprofit. I don't know if Harbor Fest is a nonprofit. It is a nonprofit. The 50th is not a nonprofit. You got your own 501c3 now?
It's through the chamber.
That is okay, but it's the event is using another nonprofit. It's not its own nonprofit. What I'm saying is I'd like to really kind of step back. One of the things that Carl Roboto brought up was events. I think that, first of all, the first part of the policy that we do not produce events is right on the end, okay? Nothing more to be said. About the funding, I think it does need to be a case-by-case basis. I think that... as much as we'd like to see, okay, just in-kind dollars, exactly what Joan said, which is the permit fees, it's outrageous. And I have to tell you, I think we need to look at the city. We really do need to look at the city and what they're charging, because it is outrageous. Not that they don't need the money, but if we're increasing funds by TOT, then maybe they can also work with us, because we need the events. 25% of the city's income, according to the records, is coming from tourism. That is growing. Okay, so we need to look at, we need those events to support our TOT. So I do, I'd like it a little looser. I think we need to look at either, you know, not say it just can only be in kind, you know, with advertising. Maybe we want to say it supports advertising efforts, but the point is I'd like to see it a little bit, you know, it has to work in with the budget. The budget needs to decide, okay, if these are events, this is how much. If we say 40,000 events, is that part of the marketing? Therefore, the 40,000 is still there, but how we're going to do it. So it does have to be event by event, but I think that the city needs to hear us loud and clear that we need events for their TOT, and they need to step to the plate and use some TOT funding to help reduce permit costs, police costs, you know, sewage costs, pump outs, et cetera, because of events.
I have a couple of comments, but I'll let you guys go around. Go ahead, Karen. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, first of all, I think we need to go back to our original mission statement. And as a bid, our mission statement is to create overnight stays. I don't think it makes any difference whether it is a vet that wants to come to town to do a marathon, to do a bike race, that is not a nonprofit, but is a fundraiser event. And if they're here and we think we can generate overnight stays with them with our destination marketing or our bid assessments, then I think, you know, that's something we should support. We also have to keep in mind that we receive funding from the city, from general funds, for regional marketing, and we have told the city that we will earmark that money to help support events. It wasn't that we were earmarking the money to support new events. It was to support events, and the city has had to back away from its city. So we're kind of in that conundrum of, yeah, it'd be nice if the city donated services to events, The city isn't doing that, but the city is giving us a certain amount of money to help support existing events. So I think the guidelines are a really good start. I'm concerned about taking out cash awards to events that are over 5 years old because of that reason. I'm also concerned about one line here that, and I think in kind is for existing and long-term events is a given. I mean, that's what we're here for. As a
Karen made that we, you know, we have funds from the Bureau, and then we also have funds from the city, and you know, which ones, I mean, it's going to be very difficult. But I think if we keep it kind of broad and not too narrow, because there are going to be certain instances where we have to take into account the history of the event, what the event is. Does it? And it may not put heads in beds, but it is something we've done traditionally, and it's good for the city, that kind of thing. And we do have funds from the city to I think achieve that. But I think it's going to be one of these things where we just kind of keep it not too limited, but general, and just kind of live with it. I think because we could just go on and on, you know, like we did with some other things as well. So just going to have to live with it, I think.
John, any comments?
I just wanted to, on the nonprofit thing, you know, the 50th, I don't know if you've got your nonprofit set up or whether you're working under the umbrella of somebody else's nonprofit, but that, a nonprofit versus the Harbor Festival, which is a nonprofit, but it's raising proceeds for charity, versus the Oyster Festival, which is a for-profit operation, is that correct?
No. No, it's raising it's proceeds go to benefit options.
Is that still the case, though?
No.
Yes, it does.
No, well, not anymore.
They get a small portion of ticket sales.
Percentage of the proceeds go. Okay.
So that one's kind of, it is raising money for charity, but right. It is a for-profit.
And a lot of events that are not, that are for-profit events, will donate a portion of their proceeds to a nonprofit charity. So, I mean, that's not uncommon at all. It doesn't mean the event is being sponsored by a nonprofit organization. There's a little bit of difference. But, like, the point I was making was our mission is to create overnight stays and generate visits to the city to increase sales tax. And whether it's by a nonprofit or by a for-profit that's donating part of their proceeds to a nonprofit, or whether it's by a strictly for-profit organization, I mean, I don't think that should be the deciding factor in whether we are willing to support the event they're trying to bring in.
And that's exactly what I wanted to say, so thank you for saying that, because that's the point. I don't think that should be a qualifier at all, so that's why it's not in there.
Yeah.
Second, as far as these are all regional marketing funds we're talking about, so a qualifier cannot be heads and beds. Mm-hmm. So that has to be eliminated as a qualifier also. Regarding the permit costs, I mean, I don't think that's this board's issue. I think it's the issue of the events and everybody else. However, I agree wholeheartedly with the argument that, I mean, if we are putting heads in beds and we are increasing sales tax, it's very easy to say on and it just happened. So the Harbor Festival weekend, as I understand it, the city was sold out. And we could say if we would have normally been 50%, then the other 50% of the rooms related to the Harbor Festival, therefore all the TOT for those rooms for two or sometimes even three nights totaled up more than equaled or exceeded the costs of permits and police. You can argue it's already been paid, so we're just being double charged by the city, therefore, and so I think there's an argument that we as a board should support and get the events themselves to stand up with the city, and we'll stand up with them and argue aggressively that those fees should be waived or severely reduced, at least. But I don't think that's the issue we're debating here, but I think we probably all agree on that. And then I think the most difficult topic is the one that, that Joan brought up. I mean, it's the Harbor Festival versus the new, and it, you know, what we heard Carl say and what I kind of bought into right away when he said it was, you know, geez, we really ought to have an event schedule all year, really hitting hard, maybe picking up on what Rick said, hitting hard on the shoulder seasons first, and we seem to be hitting the fall shoulder season fairly good right now, so we should be working probably next hardest on the spring shoulder season to get us going into the summer, and then you know, not forget the winter quarter. But and I see growing events and then moving on, and until we've grown events to fill in all the gaps on our annual calendar, I don't think we can keep on saying we'll keep funding the old events because we won't be able to fund new events. So it's a question, do you continue to fund the old ones and keep the cash on the table for them, or...
I agree with your argument, except I would just caution us about stepping back the funding when we don't have anything in the queue coming up behind it. So if we're stepping back funding, saying, you know, next year, you know, you're getting this $5,000, next year you're only going to get $2,500, and the year after that you're going to get $1,250, how do we know that in 2 years we're going to have something in the queue? The horse race is, the beach horse race event is going to be here. We don't know that. We don't have a crystal ball. So I think we need to take it on an event-by-event, year-by-year basis. That's...
best, I think my support of this plan would be that if this is how we're going to start looking at events with basically a five-year life of funding, that every event, existing event right now, be considered a new event as of this year. And then they know they've got 5 years at best for cash funding. You know, if we made that kind of a modification to this, I might consider it. Otherwise, I got to tell you, I'm not in favor of telling some of our longstanding events that funding is cut off. Cash funding is cut off right now.
Then effectively, I mean, it's a kind of this one or that one kind of thing. You know, then we delay our event policy, our finding new events for 5 years. That's our trade-off.
You know, I think that we need to see what comes forward. I mean, I don't know. I wasn't on events. I think there was an events subcommittee, and they actually did the... Actually, I didn't review the list. I think we were given a list, actually, of where our funding went. But I don't know that there were events that came forward and asked for funding, and maybe the events subcommittee could let me know, that didn't receive any funding. And, you know, what kind of events were they? Was it, and what were the reasons they didn't receive funding?
Let me just say, I agree with Joan's point. I mean, if there's no valid event that comes along for us to fund, we're certainly going to continue to fund the events we funded in the past. I agree with that. We're not going to give money to an event that isn't qualified. To answer your question, if I understood it correctly, as I recall, everybody that came in and asked for money got something, and generally speaking, the people that requested the small amounts of the garage sale thing got asked for 500 and they got 500. The people that asked the bigger amounts got something, you know, got cut mm-hmm. back because we couldn't fund all the bigger amounts. But I think, you know, the way it works is you get all your requests that come in, and let's say next go around, whoever's on the event committee, if all the same events come in and three more events show up, and we say, hey, these three new events fit the shoulder seasons and they seem like they're really good events, then everybody's funding is going to be ratcheted. You know, we're going to make room for the new events, and everybody else is going to get ratcheted down.
That's the point I'm making.
And you don't think we should do that?
No, I do. That's what I'm saying. I don't think there wouldn't be funding for new events. I think everything else just gets ratcheted
back. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
We agree.
I haven't spoken yet, so I'm going to speak in. Sorry, but I didn't get to put any 2 cents in yet, and you guys are all getting to go back for two and three dips. So real quick, I agree with the majority of what everybody's saying. I think, for me, I want to remember we're a marketing and promoting board,
I think we need to remember that. I think we're spot on about not producing events. I think we're spot on about needing to look at a yearly thing and look at how we're going to market and promote these events throughout the entire year. I think that's huge. I know we haven't done that in the past. I want to remind everybody, if you go down to number E, there are exceptions to these guidelines, and it says that. And we used this, if you remember, John, and Alex isn't here to remind us, when we did the 4th of July, we gave them $10,000 cash, and we used E for that reason. Exceptions to these guidelines are permitted when an event is designed and functions primarily for the direct benefit and enjoyment of the residents of the city. That was in there as an exception, so you could give cash if need be. Because I think most people will agree that the 4th of July is one of those events. They don't go back and give money away or do anything. I have a really hard time, personally, just me, giving, and I'm going to use the Harborfest, not to pick on them, giving the Harborfest $10,000 for them to turn around and give $10,000 to some other buddy. I have a hard time with that. It's just me personally. I love the event. I'm not saying it's not a good event, but I would much rather, like John saying, if there's 10 people in front of us and the Harborfest fits in there and we can give them money, great. And that's what we've done in the past. But if there's a new event that comes along and they're asking for $10,000, I would much rather give that to the new event than to an event that's been here for 32 years. And that's where I like these guidelines. I think these are a good guideline.
They don't sell booth space. They have, you know, it's entirely funded by contributions. So if we don't like that exception, we can take that out. But would you be supportive if we put something along the line in here as an exception of, you know, that we I don't know exactly how to say it. I'm thinking of it as we go along. We get all the requests for funding in at during the funding time, right, and then we weigh all the events together, and we decide which ones we want to support, and we'll spread the money across all of those events as properly or, you know, as evenly, not evenly because everybody doesn't get the same amount of money, but as appropriately as possible. So old events will be considered along with new events, but we're probably going to lean towards new events.
I wouldn't have any problem with that. Okay. And I would even go so far as to say if we have new events that they could be weighed more heavily than existing events, okay, or long-term events in the process of determining who gets what. I just don't like the idea of saying right now with a lot of our events they need that cash to get up and running, even if they've been in existence for 30 years or 20 years, or, you know, maybe they're hitting their five-year mark right now. If that event is bringing heads to beds, I think we should support it.
But again, it's regional money, so heads to beds is not a criteria.
Heads to beds radiates out into sales tax revenues, mm-hmm, and radiates out,
that's
into
right,
the restaurants and retail industries. So I think there's a very strong argument to be made that is supporting regional in terms of the restaurant and retail sales in Morro Bay.
I have a suggestion. What about if under E we added, exceptions to these guidelines are permitted when an event is designed and functions primarily for the direct benefit and enjoyment of the residents of the city and increases the tourism in the city of Morro Bay. Adding something along our mission statement about the overnight, about generating tourism to Morro Bay.
I don't even know that we need the exception if we take out the first 5 years.
Yeah, if we take out the first 5 years.
Out.
Because when you look at something like, and since we're all using Harbor Festival here, I understand that we're giving, I don't even remember what the amount of money was, $7,500 or $10,000, let's just say $10,000. If we gave them $10,000 this year, I get it. Oh my gosh, we're giving them $10,000 and they're giving it away to PTA and Woods and everyone else in the end. But I don't think we can any longer look at it that way. Harbor Festival, if we didn't have it and we used John's theory of the town would have been 50% full for 2 days, if we take that theory and we use an ADR of the weekend for $100, the first night alone, Friday night, the hoteliers made $45,000 in sales, and in two nights it would have been $90,000. the TOT goes back into the coffers, that goes back towards regional marketing, plus all of the restaurant revenue and everything else that that brought in. So, I don't think we can use...
To get us moving forward,
I'd like to say, John, that the city would work with the long-term...
I would love that.
Organizations, mm-hmm. nonprofits, or whatever that have put events on for years and years, but we have seen the city pull back, and the city is constrained by its own budget, and we have seen them pull back year after year after year in terms of what they can afford to fund, and I just don't see that happening. Which means these events have to cut someplace else. So if we don't help them, they cut someplace else. Maybe the music isn't as good. Maybe somebody, 100 people came over for one particular show because the event was able to put on a good musical event, be it the Oyster Festival or the 4th of July or the Harbor Festival or whatever. I mean, they have hard costs, and a lot of them don't like the little ones, like the yard sale and Dahlia Days. They have some hard costs. And they don't have really generate any kind of revenue. So, I mean, I don't see the problem with, helping these out. But, I am more than willing to open the door to discussion for, throwing a little more weight to new events that come forward in terms of what we have in budget for funding events.
So I have a solution to maybe. How about under line A, since we didn't like my E in exceptions, how about under A, grants are not intended to be a permanent source of funding, period. We could add a line of we would like them to become self-supportive. Let's just take the five-year mark out of there. Just take that sentence or sentences, however the board wants to discuss that. Then that way I agree with Joan. I think it should be a year-by-year case by case, the board and how we...
Okay.
It's like a standard operating procedure type mentality, thought behind it.
It's good for us to remind ourselves what our mission is.
Exactly. It would be a good idea with the mission statement on there to put this in with the other forms for people to see for their grants. Because one of the components that I haven't heard from anybody, we're talking about marketing and promoting overnights and stays, but also an item exception to these guidelines are permitted, period. So it gives us a leeway, all right, with this. We need to attract promoters.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard that from anybody, attraction. So if we have money and it's available out there or even as in-kind or whatever, we need to get these guidelines out there and try to attract promoters and start setting up our events on an annual basis. And I would be really liking to see that event subcommittee reinstated and really re-involved in setting up a calendar year event schedule.
I have one question. In the past, when she brought up attraction, it triggered a flag in my mind. We used events funding monies to fund the Maritime Museum, which is not necessarily an event, but rather it's an attraction. It's a grant guideline, right? But it says event policy grant guidelines. It's a stationary attraction. So, I guess if somebody has an attraction, for example, the Bozo film came forward to us and asked for funding at one point, I think this is years ago. Do we then say to them we have a granting? Where is that in here? Is that
Not talking about attraction, like to go see something. I mean, we need to attract promoters so that if somebody puts on a bridge tournament, we need to know that if they need funding for that and if we can find the space for that, that maybe we can promote something like that and get the hoteliers involved. Not a stationary attraction like the museum, Maritime Museum.
I'd like to make a motion on the acceptance of the event policy and grant guidelines with the following adjustments or changes to the policy put forward today. Under paragraph A, Second line, grants are not intended to be a permanent source of funding, period. Second, the final period, a sentence of that paragraph. So we drop after that time. The sentence begins with, the event should become, instead of be, self-supporting. Under paragraph E, exceptions to these guidelines are permitted when an event is designed and functions primarily, and then drop the balance of that sentence and add, is primarily for the furtherance of the mission statement of the board.
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
Paragraph A would read, the goal of the grant program is to cultivate and grow new visitor attracting events and assist current events in reaching potential achieve self-funding. Grants are not intended to be a permanent source of funding. The event should become self-supporting and therefore not reliant on public funds. Let me read the revised paragraph E. Exceptions to these guidelines are permitted when an event is designed and functions primarily for the furtherance of the mission statement of the board.
Discussion then?
We are in discussion.
I think we would have to amend B also, because that says after the event passes the grant eligibility phase.
Oh.
And that would be no longer. So I was thinking something along those, even if an event isn't granted money, the Bureau will continue to be supported by the Tourism Bureau.
Maybe.
I think all you have to do is start it with that sentence there. Events will be supported in,
continuing.
Sorry, I'm reading from a distance, continuing Bureau website, voicemail, print, blah, 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 blah. Activities, period.
Sentence.
Right, eliminate the first sentence and start with events will be. And that might do the trick, but it's up to you, John, since it was your idea.
I just think the idea was that if an event this year got money.
I like that line in there.
Okay.
I like it, too. You could add it if you don't want it to be a single sentence standalone. You could add it to the end of C, wherein the Bureau feels that grant funds will be most effective leveraging the already existing marketing advertisement arrangements of the Bureau. All events will be supported in continuing Bureau website, voice, print, social, and other media advertising and promotional activities.
I think we should just leave it as B and just drop that first sentence.
Yeah.
I think it's just simpler and easier.
Can that be a friendly amendment?
Is that a friendly amendment, Karen?
Yes. Except.
Accepted for a second friendliness.
Okay. Okay, any further discussion?
I just want to understand, so all events, are we making a promise that all events will be supported in continuing Bureau website, voice, print, social, and other media advertising, no matter what, they will come to us and say?
Not necessarily all those formats, but, you know, events would be posted, if nothing else, on the website calendar, so whether we're actually doing voice, print, social media, or advertising would be dependent on
the
ED and her choice in how to promote them.
Okay. Any further discussion? So before I go to a vote. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Motion carries. 6-0. Okay. Next. I know. Okay, so for the record, 12:40 is for the record, Nick's heading out. It's 12:40. Okay, review of VCB 2013-2014 funding request. I know. I want to just review real quickly. This was requested by John Myers. What we wanted to do this year is be a little bit proactive. We know they're going to come to us for a funding request, I'm sure, usually in February or March. They start their rounds. So what we thought would be nice is for us to be a little ahead of the game and address the VCB and look at what it is. So this isn't necessarily meant to be slayed today. My thought would maybe be a subcommittee to address the VCB issue and to be able to really get their fingers into it, and that would be my suggestion, but that's just what my thoughts were. I don't know. John, you brought this forward any further.
Could I show you why I was, this is crossing my mind, and again, does anybody want copies? I've got copies. And Karen has been part of this thing because I've been trying to get information. If you go to the fourth sheet down, I think it's, well, I'm sorry. So when this, I think it's the third sheet down. It's Visitor and Confidence Bureau, July through May 2013.
Yep.
Okay. And if you look at income, at the very beginning, it says prior year carryover, $170,000. Mm-hmm. And then you get total income of $983,000. Mm-hmm. Well, $170,000 is actually cash. It's not revenue. And
right.
A dollar of revenue can't be counted as revenue twice. So the real revenue for the year was
$813,000.
Which means the surplus reported is not $255,000, it's $85,000.
Gotcha.
Which, if you look at $813,000, coincidentally, look at the size of the Tourism Bureau of Morro Bay. We are larger than the VCB if you exclude Saver. And then what jumps out at me is I think I would be immediately kicked off this board if I suggested we spend $150,000 on a new website. So you got an entity that's smaller than us dropping $150,000 into a brand new website, and we're funding it. And it starts to cause concern in my mind when I see things like that. And let me give you one other example. The first two pages, look at your second page, it's January through June board financials. And this is Saver. Total income $474,000 on a budget of $1,428,000.
Do you have the top total income?
Total income.
Could this actually
Well, go now to the first page.
These numbers come from
the county.
They came from the VCB?
This is their monthly board package.
Okay, and I just wonder because
it's in ticket sales.
In 2 months, they down.
How do you change your budget?
Change their budget down by, because probably they were looking at what ticket sales they had on board at that
but
point.
But you can't change your budget. Unless you
don't know. I think we've changed our budget about three times this year.
No. This is a budget for an event. So, you know, they're budgeting a profit for the event of $91,000. Now, the month before the event happens, the budget now shows a negative
$166,000. Right.
I'm sorry. I hear
what you're saying, and I certainly think that there isn't anybody on this board that feels like we don't need to go back and reevaluate. And I think look at our return on investment that we're getting from a sizable contribution to sponsorship to Saver and to the VCB. I'm not sure, and I think this is a good, it's good to get started this early. I agree with that. I'm not comfortable, I don't think, at this point, really taking this. I'm glad you kind of opened the door, but taking it much further than this. I think, you know, I would hope that there is more to the VCB than Saver, that in benefit to its sponsors, its members, that there's more to the VCB than Saver. I must admit that I feel that Saver has become a little centric in its drive.
and I'm not real comfortable with the direction it's taking. But I also think that it's good for us to start reviewing at this point, but, you know, the VCB gets to come before us every year and show us statistically, you know, what benefit they can give to us. And I think that needs to be taken into consideration also.
I'm not making a funding decision on the VCB yet. I'm just saying that they tend to show up here in March and ask for money, and then we scramble to figure out whether we're going to give them money or not. And we give them a lot of money between the dues and the saver.
We do.
And I'm just saying, let's get ahead of the game on this thing and really look at this stuff.
Absolutely.
You've got, this thing has grown. If you look at the June, you know, the budget that was presented when saver was approved, a $1.4 million saver budget and an $800,000 VCB budget. This is no longer a VCB. It's an event company. You know, 60% of the company is producing one event. I think every one of you hoteliers made a comment over the last 90 days that you've been trying to get in touch with the VCB to do some co-op something or wherever, and you can't get a response. And I'm saying, we need to look at this thing long and hard right now. And as a director of this company, you know, we're dropping close to $100,000 a year into this thing.
So, ma'am?
And that's all I wanted to say. And I hope the board takes it up.
No.
And
I think it's... Yeah.
So,
go ahead, John.
So, this is a conversation that we've had every year, and the conversation, I think, has swelled over the past few years. Oopsie, sorry, AGP. Since we've been involved with Saver in terms of what's the value of Saver? What are we getting? You know, what's the value for Morro Bay in terms of Saver? What's the value in terms of Morro Bay for the VCB? It's always, I think, been a question. And Karen can jump in here if she wants. But today, this morning on my way out the door, I got a call from Stacy Jacob. She said, "Hey, how do I go about inviting your board over next Wednesday for a meeting at 8:30 in the morning at the VCB to discuss VCB, or rather to discuss Visit San Luis Obispo County funding mechanisms? We are putting together a task force. We'd like all of the bids to be there. And we'd like members of the bids, specifically hoteliers, to be a part of putting together a mechanism that's going to be sustainable, because right now what we're doing and the way we go about it isn't sustainable for anyone. It's not healthy for anyone." And I said, "Please hurry and call Karen. We've got 20 minutes. I don't know if she's in her car or where she's at, but hurry and call her so she can get more information from you and provide it to us somehow."
And I did have that conversation with her. The meeting is not at the VCB.
Oh.
It's their regular monthly meeting, which will take place at Cal Poly.
Okay.
And they're hopeful that all of the board members will attend.
Okay.
They'd like you to give me the feedback and let them know how many people can be expected. But you are correct in saying they're wanting to discuss a sustainable funding model. So they're looking forward to your, you know, insight.
But I suspect that they're thinking, let's reevaluate this as well. I do know that there's been a couple of different funding models floated over the past 90 days that I've, you know, heard out in the county. If you think Morro Bay is a small town, the rumor mill inside the county is also county tourism, is it's a very small county. I think it'll be good to go hear what they have to say and see what they've got on the table and how they want to approach the funding mechanism. But I would also think that it would behoove us to maybe set a subcommittee that, you know, after all of us hear about this, we either come back and set a subcommittee, or we set a subcommittee now to delve deeper into it as we understand what theirs thinking is over there.
Jane, do you have any comment on this? Okay. I want us to get moving forward. I think we need to come up with a subcommittee. I think that's great if they're inviting us to the table next week. Of course, I'm disappointed that there's a, I don't know, six-day notice on it. I feel like that tends to be the trend. We get things kind of a little last minute.
next Wednesday. Karen, can you be sure to blast the... She just got the call this morning right before we met here, so if you can send a blast to...
You know, it's their regular monthly meeting, so I was aware of their regular meeting, and today was the first notice that we had of what the subject of the meeting was going to be, and as I said, there's some urgency to this, so everybody is getting this, you know, message today, so... You know, I will send it out to you this afternoon, and if you are able to attend, please let me know so I can tell them they want to make arrangements for you.
So I guess right now we'd be looking for a couple, maybe three people to get together. John, are you available next Wednesday to attend that meeting? Okay. Just being the numbers guru, I'd love... I know I won't. I'm not available Wednesday morning, so I won't be able to go, especially without knowing... Yesterday with Wednesday. Wednesday morning at 8:30, I think she said Cal Poly. And Karen will send the full board their information. But prior to that, since we don't have what I'd like to do is make sure we have three people that would like to sit on this board or the subcommittee. Okay. Okay, so I'm looking for three people to sign up with a subcommittee. That's fine. We're all invited to the meeting. So I'm not talking about the meeting. I'm talking about the subcommittee. If we don't set up a subcommittee now, you're gonna all go to the meeting on next Wednesday, but we can't take any action on anything. So I'd like to get a subcommittee to start looking into this. Part of that subcommittee will go to Wednesday's meeting. It doesn't mean nobody else can't go. Whoever wants to go to the meeting can go to the meeting.
Since the funding... We'll come forward with the budget recommendations. Why don't we use the budget subcommittee?
That is a great idea. I am all for that. Works for me, too. Okay.
As a thought.
Are you fine with that, Jane?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'd love to look for a motion. I guess I can make one. So the budget subcommittee will... Yep.
Move that the budget subcommittee review information and make recommendation for VCB funding at the appropriate time.
Perfect. Now, I'll second.
Discussion. Does that mean that we would be working with the VCB? Like, if the VCB doesn't have a plot line, I mean, I don't know what they're going to discuss on Wednesday. I almost said Thursday. If they don't have a plot line for exactly, like, if they don't have a roadmap and they're saying, hey, we want to get you guys together to help us create a roadmap, does that mean you want the budget subcommittee to work with the VCB to help create? Or just to continue the conversation so that we're open to the communication and bring that back to you? What's your goal?
I mean, I think the VCB has always basically, you know, charted their own course, let's say, in their request. So basically what I am thinking is that we would task the budget subcommittee to kind of evaluate the request and then request from the VCB at the time and then bring it back to the board with a recommendation.
And can I ask one more friendly amendment to that? Could we also task that to include SABR? I just want to make sure that, to me, they're two separate. Okay, I just want to make sure that SABR is included in with that evaluation.
You want a VCB bundle.
I mean, that amendment is fine, but, I mean, I kind of group the two together.
Okay,
so.
Just making that clear. I just want to make sure that it's clear it's to look at VCB and SABR. Okay, so budget subcommittee, you guys have one more thing on your list. Okay, moving on. Discussion about hiring a third party to research.
We have a motion.
Oh, sorry.
And a second
right.
on
Thank
the.
You.
Sorry, just helping you.
Thank you. I seconded originally. Yeah, I seconded. So all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries 6-0. Sorry, Joan. Sorry, everybody in the TV world. I'm trying to jump ahead. It's 1 o'clock, and I'm wanting to be gone. Discussion about hiring a third party to research current website and future technology. This was on from last month's agenda.
Do their website to manage it and help them design it. I would like a few months to continue to do what we're doing for the website, bring it back to some of the SEO that we've talked about, and then at an appropriate time, maybe look at a third party. But, you know, I kind of feel like we're your third party right now. You've also had another third party evaluate it, which was Carl Roboto. And in all frankness, his evaluation mirrored exactly what we had told you that what we had assessed with the website. His recommendations also mirrored what we suggested as far as putting the SEO back and looking at the referrals. So I would just like the board to give us a little bit of time before you bring in another third party to evaluate it and get the site back to where we think it could be moving successfully.
I will turn it over. I have a comment, but I'll wait. Jane.
I agree with the idea of tabling this. I do think we're going in the right direction. The numbers show it. I think adding, you know, I don't see why the website committee can't still go ahead and keep looking if they think that there's another direction to go in. But I'm really happy with what's going on here and who we're working with. So,
Joan. Okay, Karen.
I think that this year, since we've already created a budget amendment and given TJA basically the website updates, renovations, that it's not imperative at this point that we look at a third party for review or suggestions going forward, not just review, but review and solutions. I heard Carl, like everybody else did, I think loud and clear when he said website, in terms of prioritizing what his audit said, website, market plan. I think we still have a market plan process to go through. And so I think it probably isn't making changes in terms of third party, probably isn't going to happen this year. What I would like to see is our website subcommittee maybe do RFPs for next year's budget. And, you know, you don't send out necessarily for an RFP in October, November for something that you're going to be looking at in July or August. So I think there's lots of time for website subcommittee to proceed with this. But I don't know that it's something that we need to move forward with right now.
John.
I guess my honest feeling would be maybe we get a third party to evaluate John's request.
I love
No, that. I agree with what's been said prior. I think there's a lot going on outside the website, and there's a lot going on the website. I'd rather probably wait 60, 90 days to see the results that Rick and John come back with and reevaluate our position at that time, I think.
I'm going to agree completely, too, but Joan, I'll let you make your comment. I think it's hard to evaluate something that's just had a change. I just don't think that's fair to evaluate something. I think I know Joan was talking more about some different stuff, but I think we've got so much stuff on our plate. I'd rather see this wait until, like you said, next year, beginning of the year, March, April. Something like that.
I have no comment then. Let's bring it back in January.
Okay. So seeing that, we'll move on to declaration of future agenda items. Go around the room. I've got one myself, but Jane, declaration of future agenda items.
No. None.
Joan?
Yes. I'd like to see us bring back the Carl Roboto, the Carl Roboto workshop. Look over the slides, and then have a planning session regarding our marketing plan and our website plan. I'd like to see that happen with some of our vendors and our ED first so that we can understand what our goals are. I'd like that in that to have a two-year, and I understand that these are fluid things, but I'd like us to have a two-year marketing goal setting. And possibly as far out as a five-year marketing goal setting, as Carl discussed. I think that using some of his focus plans on our marketing plan, some of his focus points on our marketing plan are going to be good and healthy for us. And I'd like to see us do that. I'd also like us to bring back an in-depth discussion on ways that we can build our database. And have any of our vendors who are doing our website communications come back to us with a detailed plan that we can look at and see if we can sink our teeth into for
the July through September financial review.
John?
I'm sorry. The only thing that was sticking in my mind was following up on Carl. Everybody gets criticized for having a consultant come in and then forget about it, and I really do not want to forget about this one. So,
And I want to reiterate that.
Becky Jones comments.
Yeah, I'm going to reiterate that too. And one thing which Karen didn't bring up, in our weekly meeting with her, we had mentioned she's already reached out to Carl. We thought maybe he could come and facilitate something for as well. So that's something we've kind of talked about briefly too, is getting, you know, he's got a full calendar, and so he's tough to wrangle. We were thinking maybe November too. So I agree. So we'll have Carl Roboto, marketing plan, goal setting, possibly a facilitating workshop of some sort, also something along those lines. Okay, building the database, classification of financials, July through September, and Joan just mentioned one other thing.
I'd like to open up the conversation with the board about subcommittees. We've had subcommittees in the past that were standing subcommittees and whatnot, but I was thinking more of in terms of getting a hotelier buy-in, reaching out to, because they're such important stakeholders in our mission, in terms of what we do here, to reach out to them and see if any of them, because a lot of them have incredible knowledge of what we're talking about, and sometimes we actually have gaps in our knowledge up here, and then we get, we get calls later, oh, you should have thought of this, or you should have thought of that, or how about this, how about that? Maybe expanding some of our subcommittees to include like roundtable conversations with the folks that are out there. We have incredibly knowledgeable people in our own community. We have people who are, you know, they're just a wealth of knowledge, and they're a great resource, and I'm not sure how that would work, but
I think as long as we keep a subcommittee within a subcommittee format of mm-hmm. three members of the board, that we could open subcommittee meetings to the public in general, mm-hmm. or to hotelier stakeholders, whatever, mm-hmm. To contribute and see what kind of response we get.
Yeah, so I'd like to have that conversation.
Okay, we'll add subcommittee, and I think you're right. I think it should include all stakeholders, which could be any of the general public, technically at this point. Hoteliers, of course, part of that.
That's it. If the subcommittee is looking for some kind of in-depth input, that we've heard a topic from the board in conversation, okay, we need to get more buy-in on that. Let's, go through the subcommittee.
Okay, so we've got four future
declaration, future agenda items. I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor?
Second.
Oh, second. I told you I fail already today. Karen. Karen seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? John's going to sit here and have martinis. Thank you, everybody.